There goes the neighborhood.
You got David Lefkowitz here. He's a Long Island arts guy. He's got his own radio show.
Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Crushed two flamingos in a fruit fight! Every color of day, whirling around at night.
Well, there goes the neighborhood. Welcome, welcome everyone on this Sunday, this very first Sunday in October, October 5th, for the 293rd episode of Dave's Gone By. We got a packed, jam-packed episode, like several that we've had for the past couple of weeks. Not one, but two guests, which is going to be really cool. Plus all sorts of stuff to talk about. Plus I have a new song that I will be playing for you on this particular show, something that speaks to the heart of what we're all kind of going through as we watch the topsy-turvy tumblings of Wall Street. Speaking of topsy-turvy tumblings, I have in the studio back since last week. I don't even know where you were last week, but he's back in the studio, ladies and gentlemen. My fine and... Wait, it's the bon vivant is in there somewhere. I forget the intro I'm supposed to do for you. And but you're Jeff Goodman.
I'm a bon vivant, all-around man about town.
All-around man about town, Jeff Goodman. Hello, Jeff.
Hello,
you're looking
Dave.
A little peaked. Are you just tired, or are you under the weather?
I don't know. I'm under the economy.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. You don't even have to explain any more than
I
that.
Know.
It's just been, you know. Although, the one
and
thing...
And it seems like you got a little grayer since I last saw you.
I'm under the economy, too,
I'm
dude.
Telling you.
Yeah. No, it's not that. I've grown my beard longer,
yeah.
So you see the gray more prominently.
Mm-hmm.
And probably a little less hair on the old head. Although, as you can see, my pubes are really filling out and bushy and black.
No, I really can't see that.
Oh,
nor do I have the desire to. Thank you very much.
Let's see. So, is it just that, or are you okay?
There's a lot of stuff.
Where were you last week?
I was home.
Oh, I thought you were, like, going off to for the New Year with family somewhere or something like that.
Well, that was...
All right, you don't want to talk about it. That's cool. We'll yak about it in the car on the way home. Or if we get really bored towards the end of the show, we'll dredge that back up.
Well, if we get a psychiatrist to call in, maybe I'll go through therapy at that point.
Yeah, you know what? I can do some, too, let me tell you. It's been tough times for everybody. But you know what? This is my favorite time. Just getting on here in front of the mic with a friend at the other mic and talking to the world.
So who's the other guest?
We have two guests. No, you're the guest co-host.
No, but
so we technically have three other people in the room. It's crowded. It's like an elevator already.
Elevator.
No, this is the coolest
show. Down one.
We're calling it Hofquiss.
Hofquiss?
Hofquiss. Because one of our guests is Carol Edmonston, whom you may not have heard of.
Never heard of her.
But her uncle was the late Sid Hoff. Do you know who Sid Hoff is?
Why do I know the name?
I'm going to spell his first name. S-Y-D.
I know.
Watch what I'm doing with my hand. And it has nothing to do with my pubes.
No.
Oh, well, he was an illustrator, a cartoonist. He drew Danny and the Dinosaur, Sammy the Seal, all these really adorable, lumpy, bumpy sort of creatures.
Nope.
Oh, you remember Danny and the Dinosaur, right? They're very cute. He had this great way of drawing people. He also did grown-up books as well.
Not in my generation.
Well, yeah, it would have been. And mine, too. I didn't
like 70s.
And he did all this. He did Larry the Long, Long Dog, which was about dachshunds, which,
See, I didn't know these characters.
Well, Sid Hoff, believe me, if there are parents out there who have children, you know who Sid Hoff was. And Carol Edmonston is his niece.
Uh-huh.
So she's going to come on for a little while and talk about her uncle and the interesting life that he led and the stuff that he was doing and some cool stories about him. Just kind of some kind of stuff about the late Sid Hoff.
Okay.
From his niece. And we're going to be talking to the executive editor of Backstage, Ooh. Can I get an ooh? Ooh. Ooh. David Sheward, who has also been on New York One. I think he's still on there. He's here to talk with me about the new Broadway revival of Equus, featuring Harry Potter and his magic wand, which is the joke that everybody's been saying, because, of course, he's been naked in the show. So we'll discuss that among other elements of this production.
I didn't even look for his magic wand.
Did you see Equus?
Of course I did.
Oh, fantastic. So we'll all get into this whole dialogue. It'll be a trio-log, whatever. And if you've ever made a trio-log, you know just how hard those are to flush. But
it'll be a, get the word, conversation.
Ooh, yes. So it's going to be me, you, David Sheward, and we'll talk about
it. You know what I'm waiting to have, though?
What?
A proversation.
Proversation. Is that with a professional or with a hooker?
Well, you know, if you have conversations.
Oh.
Shouldn't you have proversations? Or maybe it's all proverbs that you'd be talking.
Now, I wonder if that's already Dave calling in, which would be a little early, but that's okay.
Well, it's the phone, Dave. Someone's
calling the neighborhood. Why don't you do our sponsors, our magical, wonderful sponsors? You know who they are.
Well, let's see. There's always the Hewlett Minuteman Press. They are the copy kings of Broadway. They are located, I forget what street they're. They're across the street from Lohman's and next to the defunct Lohman's shoe store. And then, of course, there is the Bible of Broadway.
Performing Arts Insider for 65 years, the Bible of Broadway.
It's only the Bible for the last 60. They need 5 years to get established.
That's right. The first 15 years, they had to write out the tablets. They had to bring it down the mountain.
Right.
They had to show it to the people. People had to look at it and say, do we believe in this? And then
they go, ah, this is the Bible.
Became the Bible, yeah. So it is, though, for people in the entertainment industry, in TV, in radio, in newspapers, journalism.
It's an excellent reference guide.
To see everything you need to know. On, off Broadway, cabaret, opera, and beyond, in the pages, the hard copy pages of Performing Arts Insider.
Is this stuff beyond cabaret and opera?
Yes, there's awards and special events.
Oh, okay.
You know, things like the Backstage Actor Fest, speaking of David Sheward, or the Tony Awards. That doesn't fit into any other
the New York
category.
Musical, the new musical, the thing that just ended.
The festival, no, that fits into off-Broadway. Because that was
okay, but you did put it in there.
Oh, of course. Everything goes in there. Everything in the pages of Performing Arts Insider Theater.
Unbelievable.
Magazine. Go to performingartsinsider.com for more information, and please go to davesgoneby.org to find out how you can get a really, really, really great price if you subscribe. Now, we have two other wonderful, wonderful sponsors. Who are they?
One is Fancy Schmancy Balloons.
Please explain.
Where you can get all, for all your balloon needs.
I sound like my wife's been watching these old Charlie Chan movies. I sound like, explain, please.
Okay.
What
Mr.
is
Mr.
balloon?
Chan.
Yeah. Mr. Chan, tell me about the balloons.
If you have party and you want pitty
I made party last night. Still won't flush. That's my second toilet joke. Okay, yeah. So continue.
What was your first toilet joke?
Oh, something about flushing. Try conversation something. Anyway, continue.
Oh, notice they were both. I'm like that big, and oops, there they go.
Brain small for mouth so large. Please continue.
if you have party, you want pretty, pretty decorations, you call 516-797-3229. That's 516-797-3229. And then there is also a new sponsor, but I forget the name of it. It's a deli. A specialty food store.
How could you forget the name of the deli? By the way, that was our guest calling in, so we'll get to him in a couple of minutes. But Woodrow. The Woodrow.
Well, you know, I do not live near the Woodrow, but I've heard about it.
Uh-huh. Not so just from me, by the way.
It is a landmark.
It's been around for 40-something years in Hewlett, the Peninsula Shopping Center, for the most delicious cold cuts, chicken dishes, veal they've got. They've got a Romanian tenderloin that I love over there. I mean, it's a big slab of meat.
A Romanian tenderloin?
You've never had
Clement?
No, she's not so tender if you've seen her recently. Sorry, Olga. No, but I mean, plus hot dogs, french fries, hamburgers, knishes at the Woodrow Deli. I've been going there since we moved to Long Island, since I was 12 and a half. My family goes there a couple of times a month. And finally, now they're becoming sponsors. They're part of the neighborhood. So everybody, WoodrowDeli.com. And remember, there's only one W in Woodrow, and it's at the beginning. So it's WoodrowDeli.com.
It's the Woodrow O.
And, and the other thing that the owners keep stressing, and Norm has been there for 47 years, and
Norm!
Steve has been there for 30-something years.
It's just like Cheers.
They do catering, and they'll rent out the place for parties, too. They're really trying to push that. So, folks, if you want to cater a party, you got a Thanksgiving coming up. You know, you've got the day. Well, Yom Kippur, you don't. Most people do dairy, so maybe not that. But Sukkot party.
Most people don't eat on Yom Kippur, Dave.
And what do you do the night?
Arab Yom Kippur, you have a.
No, night after. You break the fast with a big.
Yes, but Yom Kippur is actually from sundown to sunrise.
All right. So. All right. Are we going to argue about this, or are we going to move on with the show? WoodrowDeli.com.
And by the way, when
leave off the last W for wow. That's just terrible. Let's see. Do I have to tell you anything else? Oh, and by the way, I'm reminding everybody once again to hear older episodes of Dave's Gone By.
Why is that?
Well, because they're free. You can listen to them anytime, 24/7, and you can skim through them. So if there's a dull part, like where you're talking, people can jump over it. And listen, they're all at davesgoneby.org. Some are at the radio station website, and some are at davesgoneby.org. Literally, you click through the Togol Theater website. But it's all at davesgoneby.org. You just click the little links. It's easy. I make it sound complicated. It's simple. And there's hours
and you get to see a picture of you there.
Several. And a picture of you, too.
That's
so try not to have your breakfast just before you log on. I'm being mean. But that's me.
But so, are we going to talk to David Stewart?
Stewart, he's the executive editor of Backstage, and we're going to be with him in just a couple of minutes. But first, going to play the song. This is the song. You came in here feeling bad about the economy. I came in here feeling bad about...
Did you write the song? Or?
This little ditty, I wrote it. I sang it, God help us, and I played it on my little organ.
Do you call it Dave?
Actually, it's called Crappy Days Are Here Again.
Banks are failing, feds are bailing, look at all the falling stock. War, inflation, dying nation, smashing upon Plymouth Rock. Crappy days are here again. The world is filled with fear again. Our savings disappear again. Crappy days are here again. Grab your money from the bank and hawk your clothes to fill your tank. We have George Bush and greed to thank. Crappy days are here again. My, how the deficit's grown, and good luck getting a loan. See the banks go up in smoke, and all the brokers going broke. Just like the New York Mets, they choke. Crappy days are here again. Everybody's lost and dumb, and frightened of the years to come. But there are no towers to leap from. Crappy days are here again. One thing we all know for certain, no one's hurting at Halliburton. Crappy days will hit us hard. Keep maxing out that credit card while other countries we bombard. Crappy days are here again. Everyone is sad and stressed. Depression leaves us all depressed. America's been repossessed. Crappy days are here again.
Inside Broadway, brought to you by Performing Arts Insider and TogolTheater.com. Yes, we are back with Inside Broadway, and we're going into the Broadway season already. We've had a couple of openings here. We've had title of show, I think, was from this season. And let's see, we just had 13 opening tonight.
Yes.
And then last week, well, and Tale of Two Cities, let's not forget that. Jill Santoriello was our guest last week. She wrote the music and the book for for Tale of Two Cities.
Well, she didn't really write the book. She kind of adapted the book.
That's true.
And well, that's what I was surprised when I saw that playbook. I said, oh, really? We're taking credit for the story of A Tale of Two Cities?
Well, what? Who wrote Lerner and Lowe? They don't take credit for Pygmalion?
It says adapted.
From
well,
George this is adapted from.
But it doesn't say adapted from anywhere in the
I mean, Bublil Schoenberg. Really? That she doesn't give credit to Charles Dickens?
No. I was shocked in the play, because that was pretty funny.
But we're not talking about Tale of Two Cities tonight. We're talking about Equus, and we want to get our special guest on the phone. He's the executive editor of Backstage. Yes, the Backstage. His name is David Sheward. First of all, let's make sure we have him there. Dave, you there?
Yes.
Oh, thank you so much for holding. Thanks for
now,
for
David, is it the Backstage magazine, or is it the Backstage paper?
It's a newspaper.
Oh, I know it's a newspaper, but...
And we have a website.
But do you call it just Backstage, or do you call it Backstage newspaper?
We call it Backstage.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for clearing that up.
I don't know. I just...
actually, one thing I do wonder about Backstage, of how the balance is now. I don't know if you know these numbers or these figures, but when I first started getting Backstage way back when I was an actor, there was no internet. It was just the newspaper.
Yeah.
Do you know what the balance is now of how many people actually still buy it on the stands or subscribe to it as opposed to people who just subscribe on the web?
Well, I do know that our in New York, our circulation is 20,000. That doesn't include, you know, pass along, where if someone buys a copy and then they give it to a friend or whatever.
Oh, I see Rock's about 15 copies just to save people money, yeah.
Right. And on the web, we have, like, don't know the exact figures, but we get something like a million hits a month. So that would be a million, you know, times that a person accesses the site. It may be one person doing it a couple of times.
And Nielsen owns you guys now, right?
That's right.
Cool, cool. So, and you've been there how long? Over
a
20
long
years.
Time.
Yeah.
About over 20 years.
So you started.
So since you were like 9, right?
Yes.
you started in what capacity there? And now
I was a part-time editorial assistant when I started.
Wow.
I was an actor. I was trying to get making a living as an actor, and I thought, gee, I'll get all the thing with Backstage is we have all the casting notices, and I thought, oh, I'll get a leg up on everybody, and I'll know what casting notices are coming in.
Huh. And it just ballooned from there, and of course, Sherry Eaker is a good friend of mine. She was sort of your predecessor, although you have a kind of a different job title, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But
she is our editor at large.
Okay. Are you on a cell or are you on a landline?
I'm on a landline.
Ooh, where? Is
In Queens, that's where I live.
Call your Verizon rep.
Needs your line needs a little work, but we got you. We're happy to have you.
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, but I think it was like two or three times your words kind of stopped because the signal broke.
Oh, okay. So, do you want me to try another phone?
No. We're
not right now.
We're good. Yeah,
we're
good.
Okay.
So let's get on to Equus, which I think we all saw last week.
So, I saw it 2 weeks ago.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So who loved it?
I loved it.
Okay. Why?
I loved this. Well, it's also memories for me because it was one of the first plays I ever saw. And it brought back a lot of good memories for me, and I love the play. I really do, even though I think it's a little dated. But it also, my big problem was with Richard Griffiths,
who plays the psychiatrist who is trying to unlock the key to why this rather disturbed young man blinded 6 horses in a stable where he was working.
But I really like the story, and I like the way the whole show is written. Did you read the author's notes in the playbill?
No, I did not.
It's very interesting that when he wrote the play, he was told the story, just the facts of the story, by a friend of his, that this trial was happening about this boy who blinded the horses. And then he knew it actually happened, but when he went to look into it, he either couldn't find it or something, and then his friend died, so he had no idea about the story. Everything he wrote is just all the facts about the story are all made up in his head.
Uh-huh,
but
okay.
The actual situation is real.
Now, Dave Sheward, Jeff, you saw it with Richard Burton on Broadway, am I correct? Dave, you saw it originally way back when it was what? On its original tour?
It was in that I saw the touring production of the same. It was the same staging that John Dexter did on Broadway.
Of the one that came to Broadway this time, yes. You saw it. Has it changed very much on its way to Broadway?
No. What I'm saying is, back in 1970 something, 76 or so.
Well, it opened. Okay.
When I was in high school, it was on tour in Philadelphia. The production that Richard Burton did.
Oh, the Burton one, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, this was a tour of it, and it was starring an actor named Douglas Campbell, who was a Canadian actor, who was playing the Richard Burton, the role that originated on Broadway
by
Anthony Hopkins.
Right.
That I saw in Philadelphia.
And by the way, other memorable people who played, it was Anthony Hopkins, Anthony Perkins did the role.
Yes. Anthony Perkins, right.
Yeah.
The psycho guy, yeah.
And you know my favorite person who did the role?
Who?
Who did it for a long time? Leonard Nimoy.
That's right. That's right, he did.
Wow. That's logical, actually.
He did live long and prosper in that one.
Yeah.
So, David, what did you think of that original production that you saw, and then, again, how compared to this one?
Well, the original production, there were several elements that were very different. It's interesting that it's the same set designer.
Napier?
Yeah, John Napier. Mm-hmm. It's the same set designer, but in the original production from the 70s, the audience members were seated on the stage itself in this new staging there in a sort of a balcony above the stage behind the action. And it was very intimate, and you sort of had this feeling that it was that everyone were like students or medical students at a lecture in a psychiatric hospital, and everything was like you were right there.
Did you sit on stage?
No, I sat in the audience.
Okay.
But it sort of gave the feeling that it was all happening right in front of you, and that it was real life. And that this production is not quite as intimate. It's more removed and more theatrical.
Very true.
It's almost more like a hospital setting or a hospital operating theater because they've got audience members above the stage.
Right.
Looking down on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas in the original production, they were right there on the stage, and all the members of the cast came in and sat with the audience throughout the entire production.
And also, if I remember correctly, they also talked in the round rather than here they kind of ignored those people.
Yeah.
Up there.
Yeah.
And it was like almost pleading a case to I sat on the stage and I kind of almost felt like a juror on the stage.
Okay. Well, but again, you loved it. You thought it all pretty much.
I liked this because it brought back great memories. I think it's a great show.
It's a very good production. I do think, however, that the director, Thea Shadrock, I think there are a couple of things about it. I think that you had mentioned that it was a little dated, and I think that the thing with this play is, and like all of Peter Schaffer's other plays, it's sort of about the conflict between a sort of a sane, regular, quote-unquote, normal person versus someone who's insane or perceived as mad but has a great passion, and there's sort of this envy and jealousy of the mad, passionate person for the sane, regular person. We see that in Amadeus, where Salieri is very normal and normal talent, and he's wildly jealous of Mozart, who is insane and scatological and uncontrollable.
Kind of like me, actually, yeah.
Yeah, but who has this uncontrollable talent.
Although Mozart was talented.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
No, I'm saying that Salieri Mozart was even more talented.
No, we were just comparing.
Dave
was kind of comparing himself to Mozart. So
he was comparing Lefkowitz to Mozart.
Yeah, right. Not that big a stretch, I don't think. But as far as the datedness of the play, what disappointed me when I saw Amadeus, when they brought that back a few years ago with David Suchet, they did a revival of that on Broadway, and I remember seeing the original production, not even with the original cast, and thinking just how exciting, there was something thrilling and theatrical about it, and then seeing the revival and thinking, wow, there's a lot of narration here, and it just kind of sat there. At least with Equus, although I didn't see the original production, I knew the play, I'd read the play, I'd seen the movie years ago, it was, for the most part, thrilling when it wasn't kind of silly or it wasn't a little boring and overwritten with speeches. The other times were pretty exciting.
I do think that the other thing about this compared to the original production is that this production is a lot more sexual. I mean, there is the sexual element in the boy's relationship with the horses.
The horses, yes.
And it comes, and this production is very homoerotic. I mean, all the horses are played by these big, muscular, athletic actors with horse masks on. And there's a lot of homoeroticism.
But I
thought
it was the same in the 70s.
But it was more, I just had the feeling that it was more about religion and worshipfulness and the fact that Alan, the boy who does the blinding, worships this god in his head, of this animalistic god of, and it was more about that sort of passion. It was about that and a sexual passion.
Okay, yeah, because...
Yeah, probably the religious aspect, too.
Well, the fact that they took down the poster of the Christ and replaced it with the horse.
And in this production, I felt there was an emphasis on the sexuality, which is part of it, but it's not all of it.
Or Alan Strang calls it, the ha-ha. That's when he has his orgasm. Or well, this religious, ecstatic, horse-equine, homosexual orgasm that he calls
it. Or bestial, almost.
Or this merging of man with animal.
Yeah, and that is what the doctor, played by Richard Griffiths, envies. He envies not necessarily this specific thing, but a passion that he does not feel for his wife or for anything.
I agree with Jeff about Richard Griffiths. I wanted a little more from him. Mm. I understood what he was doing. He was trying to be laid back. He wasn't going to be Richard Burton with a sonorous voice. He was going to be like more of a schlubby guy.
Well,
but his projection is difficult. He lisps. Worse than I do. And it was kind of, I kind of was like, come on, dude.
Yeah, it was, the very beginning was very slow. The exposition took forever.
Oh, that didn't bother me.
See, I don't know, maybe it's because I know this, well, you knew the story too, so I don't know.
Well, we all think of Harry Potter.
I loved him, I thought
he was
great.
Oh, he was very good.
Yeah, me too, I agree.
It was very impressive for someone who has not done a lot of stage work. I think the only play he had ever done was a guest shot in this comedy thing. He did a little cameo in the play What I Wrote, and he played himself little bit. But I thought he was quite impressive for someone who has not done a lot of stage
work.
And
it's a tough role.
Yeah, it's very difficult. It's a very difficult
because
part.
Because a lot of this, his lines are partial words and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and... Am I the only one, though, who had a real one of my worst problems with this production was with Kate Mulgrew.
Oh, I hated her.
She was, she had done a one-woman show off-Broadway a few years ago in which she played Katharine Hepburn, and I thought she was doing Katharine Hepburn's imitation.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. There was one scene she was absolutely atrocious. I didn't know what she was doing. Sorry?
I read a review at some point of The Seagull, I believe, or maybe it was something online that I read this where someone was saying when you have American actors with British actors in a production and everyone is supposed to be British and the Americans tend to be to compensate get to be more British than the British, and I thought she was being so British and so proper, you know, let's all have some tea.
Yeah.
It sort of obscured the intention of the role.
Well, she came out like that, all stiff and British, and then she had a scene where she started literally like chewing the scenery, and I was actually shocked. That's one of the worst things I've seen, especially in a major production that I generally liked. And we got to kind of wrap this up, but you know, I remember I did community theater on Long Island. This is going back about 15, 20 years. And we were traveling theater, so we'd go to libraries and community centers. And what we would do is take these cubes in one particular show we did.
We
painted them first, and then they became the chairs, they became the tables. You know, we were always moving cubes every 5 minutes when a scene changed.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am along Broadway with, I'm assuming, a very expensive ticket and a major new production with big stars in it. And they're moving cubes. Did that bother anybody else?
Nope.
Okay.
I know what you, it's sort of the one set is supposed to be different settings. It's supposed to be flexible and all that.
Yeah. See, I like that. I like the fact that you had to, because in essence, it's a story. It's a man is telling a story, and you had to use all these different things for the cubes are just. There was a desk, a couch, or this or that. It was in his home. It was in his office. It was at the boy's home.
Yeah, it's elemental. I mean, we shouldn't, as critics, we should be happy that we're using our imagination.
I thought it was fine. I also thought the set was very similar to
The original?
The original one. The original one didn't spin.
Okay.
I don't remember the spinning.
That was the extra $500,000 that they needed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all in all, Dave, you mm-hmm. thought what about this Equus?
I thought it was a very good production, some very fine acting, some flaws in some of the casting with Kate, in some of the performances with Kate Mulgrew, overdoing it with the British, with being British, and but very fine performances from Daniel Radcliffe and Richard Griffiths, and it's not as exciting. I mean, it's very strange when you reach I don't know everyone's age in this conversation, but you sort of reach an age where you've seen a lot of the shows that are on Broadway.
Right.
And because it's a safer bet to do a revival, and you will have seen the original. And this, to me, does not compare. It's okay, but it's not as good. And I think that someone who has not seen the original will have a whole different take on it.
Cool. So that's funny. I figured it was just less because I was seeing it without Burton. I mean, it's just,
well, but Dave saw it not with Burton on.
I saw it with another actor.
Yeah,
I know. That's what I'm saying. I just assumed that.
But it could also be that this particular play, like maybe the other Peter Schaffer plays, like the first time you experience them, it's wow, and then once you know it, and then a few years go by,
right.
It's like, well, he's a good writer, but he's also throwing smoke a lot of the time, or we've just, the world has changed and we know a lot more.
Whereas The Seagull, which also opened this week, is still fresh and exciting and vital, and there are things in it that are new, depending on the production.
I haven't seen, I'm looking forward to it. I'm seeing this week, so I've heard only raves. Well,
yeah.
I've read a couple of near raves, but so that's coming up this week. And just to finish off with David Sheward, the executive editor of Backstage, you're also a member of the Drama Desk, your former president of the
That's
Drama
right.
Desk, and you've written a couple of books. Please tell us what they are and how we can get them.
Oh, did you say books? You made a funny, I didn't quite...
Yes, books.
I do have a new book coming out in about a week or so.
Ooh.
It is a biography of George C. Scott.
Wow.
It's called Rage and Glory, The Volatile Life and Career of George C. Scott, and it is the first complete biography of him. There was a book written about him in the 70s, but that is out of print. And it is published by Applause Theater and Cinema Books, and will be out in bookstores in a week.
In a week, that's wonderful. And available, obviously, on Amazon. And
yes, on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com and at finer bookstores everywhere.
Well, what is the title of that again?
Okay, it's called Rage and Glory, The Volatile Life and Career of C. Scott.
Well, just substitute Scott's name for mine, and you basically have my name, too. Well, it's been glorious to talk to you.
Yours is rage and...
and desperation.
There you go.
Thank you. David Sheward, congratulations on the book. Great work, continuing work on Backstage, of course.
Thank you.
And best of luck with all your endeavor. Are you also on New York One still? I know you used to be
yes.
on... Oh, when can people catch you there?
I'm on New York One on their show On Stage, which is on Saturdays and Sundays at 10:30 in the morning and 7:30 at night.
What time?
2:30 in the morning, did you say?
No, 7:30 in the morning. Sorry, you got me all mixed up.
Sorry, I can your mic on your telephone.
Well, we
out.
Heard you. You were on at 8:30 in the morning.
Oh, it's New York One On Stage on New York One, and it is on 9:30 in the morning and 7:30 at night on Saturdays and Sundays.
Cool.
And I'm on every other week, and it's also on Monday nights at 9:30 and 12:30 a.m. on Monday nights.
I suppose you have a website where people can kind of look all this info up.
Well, we have backstage.com,
okay.
where I have a blog.
That's it. Backstage.com for all the information you need to know about David Sheward. And also thanking you so much for being in the neighborhood and being part of Inside Broadway reviewing Equus. We're back with Dave's Gone By and also a little bit more of Inside Broadway because we can get to the news. We normally do the theater news first and then go on to the reviews and stuff. And by the way, everybody heard Jeff scream at me, say goodbye, because I can... I never did a proper goodbye to David Sheward, but Sheward literally called back and he said, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't get to say goodbye to you. So we both said goodbye to each other while the commercial and the music was playing. So we're all tidy and we're all squared away. So let's get squared away with the news of Broadway.
What's the news on the Rialto, Dave?
Well, let's see. This is kind of big enough to be Broadway, but it's not technically Broadway. Cirque du Soleil has got another show coming back to New York. They're going to be doing something called Cousa. Yep. I mean, how many have they done?
We have that already.
We have Cluzo already? I don't think so. And I couldn't make a joke on that
title. It's been for quite a while. It's not.
Yes, that is correct. Here are the two things that make it a little bit interesting. First of all, it's more, they say, of an old-style Cirque show. Mm-hmm. In the sense that, I mean, we've seen the Cirque du Soleil shows in Vegas, and they're pretty spectacular.
Love them.
O and Ka were phenomenal. Literally.
Not
I'm a jaded
love.
Critic. I'm sorry?
Love?
You saw Love. I didn't get to see
Oh,
Love.
You didn't see the... Oh.
I mean, but from what I saw, my mouth was agape, and I've seen thousands of things, and I've seen enough Cirque du Soleil to last me a lifetime, but seeing them in Vegas was something
not many. I could see them every week. I love them.
Come to see Cusa, one that opens in April on Randall's Island in New York. But here's the deal. This one's going to be a little more old-fashioned, with just stunts and acrobatics and aerials and more comedy, more clowning. The reason I'm kind of interested is the person who wrote this version and directed it is the guy who started with Cirque du Soleil originally and branched out from there and eventually was part of the team that created Full Moon, David Shiner.
Oh, really?
First time I saw David Shiner was with Cirque du Soleil.
Oh, I didn't
and
know that.
He did that movie routine there, and that's when I knew he was going to be huge. I mean, people were falling all over themselves laughing. So I'm very interested to see what he does with Cusa, hopefully more than he did with Seussical. Well, you know. Yes, remember he was the original Seussical before Rosie O'Donnell
Rosie
took over.
Came in.
So that's coming in April. And, little story just for you, Jeff. Guess what's coming to Las Vegas in May? Since you're this big Vegas person.
Oh, I know. Young Frankenstein? No.
Oh, no, that, no, I'm not doing the monster. I'll do more about
Wait.
Audio.
Oh, I heard
Roar.
You. Oh,
bum 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 bum. No, that's Little Mermaid. Sorry. What the hell?
Oh, that's right. The Lion King.
Thank you.
I mean,
yes, I should have done the warthog noise. Something like.
No, I would never get.
Yes.
But it's coming to take over the place where Mamma Mia was.
Mandalay Bay.
Yeah.
Mandalay Bay. It's opening in Vegas May 2nd. So, and this is a real. This is not just a little tour thing. This is a big Vegas Lion King,
well,
along with New York, London, Hamburg, Paris, Tokyo, and. I hope I pronounced this right. Fukuoka are the only places that have actual Lion King sit-down productions. So they're, now Vegas is going to get one in May.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. I'm so thrilled that finally a show, a theater is kind of being accepted. And they said it's going to be the full production. I don't know if that means the if it's going to have an intermission, it's going to be more than 90 minutes.
Oh, I see what you mean.
So I'm wondering about that. But, you know, Mamma Mia did very well. It's closing in January at Mandalay Bay.
So it recouped. It did well, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Okay.
And I think Mandalay Bay is going to keep theater alive there because, my God, Spamalot died, producers died.
Right. The producers of all things.
Avenue Q really.
Yeah, no, that really didn't do well at all. Hairspray, did that come even?
No,
or?
Hairspray didn't come.
Oh, okay. It was
but
supposed
that, actually,
to.
Actually, I have news about Hairspray.
What's the Hairspray news? Oh, yes.
I heard this rumor. I heard this good and bad rumor. Good part of the
it's
rumor.
It's not a rumor. It's true. But
Harvey Firestein is coming back to Hairspray.
Yes.
But it's closing in January.
It's not rumor. It's both true.
Oh, is
Hairspray
it?
Is going to close. They don't have an exact date, but it'll be first or second week of January. And sometime between now and then, probably towards the end, Harvey Firestein is going to go back in for a couple of weeks as Edna Turnblad, the mother character, now being played by George Wendt. Of Cheers fame. See how it all circles back? We mentioned Norm before.
Yeah.
I love how that works. Yes.
And then also, this weekend we lose title of show. Or next weekend we lose title of show. Right?
One of these, yeah.
And Xanadu closed early. That was sad.
That closed, like, end of September? Well, it's tough times,
dude. It was supposed
to close
this weekend, and they closed it a week early.
Two or 3 weeks. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because they were a show starts to hemorrhage money, they're going to let it go. But one show that is doing all right.
What's that?
Here is a Broadway show that is actually doing okay.
Which
better
one?
Than okay. Boeing Boeing.
Boeing Boeing recouped its investment, didn't they?
That's right. $2.6 million recouped the investment this week. So somebody's making money out there.
Well, that's good. It's a very odd thing for... It's a non-musical.
For a play to be doing that well. And also some news about Boeing Boeing. Two of the original cast members are going to be leaving. Catherine Hahn, you might know her from Crossing Jordan. She plays one of the Stuart Eye, mm-hmm. and Gina Gershon is also leaving.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be replaced, respectively, by Paige Davis. You remember her from the Trading Spaces,
yeah.
and she's done Chicago and stuff like that. She's doing the role of okay. Han had. And replacing Gina Gershon will be Rebecca Gayheart.
Ooh.
So, you know, sort of a semi-hoggy alert there, kind of.
Okay.
Okay. Mark Rylance is staying in. That's the main...
That's the important part.
Mark Rylance was there. You have to see it. That's the thing.
I'm trying to think. It was around the news, Dave?
No, those are basically...
Those are the big... The big news.
It wasn't a big week because, remember, Jewish holidays and also... There's a freeze now because people are waiting to see what's happening with the market. So producers are thinking, well, are we going to keep stuff running?
There was one news that I was upset about.
What?
My pal Chester Gregory is no longer in Shrek.
Oh.
He got replaced as Donkey. They have a new Donkey.
Oh. Now, do you know Chester Gregory personally? How? What?
I met Chester when he was doing Hairspray. He was like the best seaweed ever. He could... well,
that will be on his tombstone, you know. Best seaweed ever, 1958 through.
No, he came in. He totally, you know, came in as a young kid, his first thing. But man, he tore up the stage as seaweed.
Well, I was the fifth best seaweed ever, and I'm relatively proud of that. You know,
considering you're not black, and
I'm not,
and you can't sing or dance. But anyway, but he left Hairspray and he went and he did Crybaby.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's going to be in something else, isn't he?
He was going to be in Shrek.
Oh, so you're saying he left Shrek, or he's?
I'm not sure. All of a sudden, I saw something that said he's no longer in Shrek.
Ooh,
they
okay.
have a new Donkey. I was so excited for him.
No, that's a kick in the ass, ain't it? We have, oh my God, it's 11:45, and we have still so much more to do on this program. So let's wrap up in some
okay.
where we kind of have, and get to Carol.
Let's close
Edmonton.
The windows, la 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 ladies.
No, that's the beginning. The la la la. Did you notice that I changed the intro music to Inside Broadway? My wife has been hawking me for months that she found
Hold on. Excuse me, we've had a Dave is not gay moment.
Okay. Oh, because I mentioned my wife?
Yes.
And the fact that she said that intro music was really, really gay. So it's music from the musical Nine. It goes la 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 la. And my wife Joyce was just like, Dave, you have to change that music.
La la la.
Now we have some real fuerte kind of man music. Although the end kind of stuff is from the Music Man. You'll hear it. It goes like this. Gentle. We've just been Inside Broadway, thanks to TogoTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider.
Hi, this is Carol Edmonston, and I am here today with Dave's Gone By, and I am the niece of the late Sid Haas, the acclaimed children's author and cartoonist. And I want to welcome you to WGBB Freeport.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on WGBB. And I want to talk a little bit about cartoons and things like that. I think if I wanted to be drawn by a cartoonist, to be lampooned, sort of caricatured, but in a loving way, there's a couple that I might want to go with. Like, I don't know about the Doonesbury people, Gary Trudeau, because they're kind of pointy-looking and a little shifty-looking, even the nicer ones. Some of the political cartoonists would just be evil, like that guy in the New York Post, wouldn't want him going near me, but Sid Haas, if, granted, he would probably make me a little tubbier than I am. I mean, I could stand to lose a few pounds. He'd probably pack 20 pounds on me, but he'd make me look so cute with those like big round eyes and all these round kind of bowling pin curves. Now, I think I would make a really adorable Sid Haas character. Now, if you don't know who Sid Haas is or was, then you don't remember your childhood. You don't remember Danny and the Dinosaur or Sammy the Seal or I wish I'd known about Lengthy the Long, Long Dog as a dachshund owner that I am. But someone who does know and does remember the late Sid Haas is his niece, Carol Edmonston, and she's here in the Daverhood to talk about her uncle. Hello, Carol.
Hi, Dave.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's a little warm in my neighborhood.
Well, where is your? We're in the Daverhood. See, I'm Dave, so this is the Daverhood. The kind of bad puns we make when we're not cartoonists. But where are you?
The Carol Hood is in Southern California, not far from Disneyland.
Oh, not too, so how hot is it?
Today it feels hotter than they predicted. I would certainly say it's in the 80s.
Oh, okay. Not too bad. Okay, enough about the weather. Let's talk Uncle Sid. When was the first time you met Sid Hoff?
My goodness, as soon as I remembered being introduced as a young child to an uncle that would visit us, just as a very young child. They lived, you know, in Long Island in Bell Harbor and would come to California a lot. So as a little girl, I was a very, very close uncle.
Okay, and you would see him at family gatherings, or how often would you see Uncle Sid?
Well, you know, Sid traveled the world doing his shtick. You know, he would travel doing presentations at schools and libraries, and he and his wife had a very close relationship with my parents, so they would be in California at least once a year. So I saw him quite often.
So what was your impression of him? I mean, at what point, since you knew him as a tiny kid, at what point did you realize he was kind of famous, and also that he was a cartoonist in all these newspapers and all these books all over the world?
Well, you know, I always knew he was a cartoonist because he always sent us his books, but the books that I remember as a young child were the adult cartoon books.
I assume they weren't that adult.
Well, no, you know, and I'll tell you the thing. He has such a recognizable style in art, as you were explaining in the beginning. It's very simplistic. He used a lot of bold color, and all his characters were just very simple, simply drawn. So I was always drawn to the covers of his books. The adult cartoons I didn't really care about. My brother and I think when we were maybe close to 8-10 years old is when he wrote his first children's book that we remember, which is very out of print now, called Muscles and Brains. But we always just knew him as our uncle who happened to have been as funny as my parents. I think it wasn't until my son, who's now in his 30s, was a youngster and I used to arrange for Sid to do his chalk talks, his little shticks at the schools, and I all of a sudden recognized him as a performer who also was my uncle, and I was amazed at the gift that he was able to give the children, really to inspire them and teach them how they could become their own cartoonists in their own world.
Was he a sweetheart, or was there kind of a darker side that you didn't see in the drawings or you didn't see in the personality, even among the family gatherings?
No, he was always just a really loving, loving uncle. I think the part that has intrigued me in my discovery, for me, I wanted to honor his rich legacy, and I developed and created the website sidhoff.org. And so in the process of doing my research, I discovered so much about the man behind the dinosaur, behind Danny and the dinosaur, that his political beliefs as a young cartoonist long ago in the 30s. So that whole part of Sid is very intriguing to me because he really had a lot to say and was able to take pen and paper and express his political views in the world.
Well, what were they and how did they differ from the prevailing sentiment of the early 30s?
Well, I tell you, you know, they would be very relevant today. You know, long ago when he had sold his first cartoon to the New Yorker at the age of 18, at about that time, he also, you know, was living in and had bohemian roots in Greenwich Village, and with a lot of his classmates would go to the Cafe Society, which was started by Barney Josephson, and that was a political cabaret and a lot of satire on the upper class. And Sid actually lent his artwork to the walls in Cafe Society, which was, you know, a lot about just a spoof on that upper class. And he actually penned a whole book under a pseudonym called The Ruling Clause, C-L-A-W-S-S, just really in support of the working class.
And, I mean, at a certain point, because of his success, he moved well past the working class. Did that cause any conflict? I mean, did he always see himself as a 9-to-5 working class man, or was there a point when you put in your third swimming pool, you realize it's almost a little hypocritical?
Well, I think he recognized, you know, when Danny and the Dinosaur came out in 1950, it's actually its 50th anniversary, celebrating its 50th anniversary, it came out in 1958, that he recognized with the huge success of that book, it was time for him to move on and you know, honor the gift that he was recognized for in really inspiring children at a very young age to read.
Hmm.
And, you know, so time changes, and he moved on along with it. He did write an amazing book on editorial and political cartooning in 1976 that he featured 700 cartoons from about 165 cartoonists, which, you know, just really wanting to honor what these political cartoonists have to gift the world.
Do you think he had any kind of a rivalry, or maybe he knew and had a friendship with Dr. Seuss?
Well, he did not personally know him, but they certainly knew of one another. And they certainly penned cartoons for the same publications here and there. But he did not have the pleasure of meeting him. Hi, this is Carol Edmonston, and I am the niece of the late Sid Hoff, the acclaimed children's author and cartoonist, and I'm here today with Dave WGBB Freeport.
We're talking with Carol Edmonston, who is the founder and the publisher of SidHoff.org, and that's Sid, SYDHOFF. Sid Hoff, the famous and kind of beloved cartoonist, both for children and grown-ups. What are some things that would surprise us that we wouldn't know about him or guess about him from the kind of drawings that he did?
Well, what surprised me in my research on Sid is, you know, how involved he was, you know, as a young man in the political arena and standing up for causes. William Randolph Hearst actually declared his cartoon strip called Tuffy about a little girl who did funny things important for national morale during World War II. So that kept Sid from serving actively in the armed services. However, Sid, you know, long ago wanted to take off to Spain to help fight in the Spanish Civil War. I think this is part where the expression "Oy vey" came from in my family, because my grandmother was, you know, the ice bag came out to be put on her head for her high blood pressure, and she didn't want to see him taken off for Spain, so he tempered some of his, you know.
I never understood that. Somehow all the artists and intellectuals of that era felt like they had to go run off and fight in Spain. I've never before or since seen any kind of a war or conflict. You don't see Hollywood movie stars running to Darfur putting on, you know, ammo. Yeah, just something about the Spanish-American War was so, I don't know,
politically
romantic
to
those people.
You know, there were many. He went down, I think, to the pier to see off his friends that were going over there, and most of them did not come home. Those early days, you know, with Hitler's rise to power. You know, I think even Sid, there was a quote of his, he said, you know, he had that urge to do battle with evil. It became irresistible. So he did what he felt he could, considering, you know, the wife, the children, the parents, and, you know, everything he needed to balance his life with.
Did he live a long life?
Sid?
Yeah.
He passed away in 2004 at the age of 91, so he had a rich life.
He ended up
contributing about 571 cartoons to The New Yorker, nearly 200 books, some of which he did the artwork and didn't write, but most of them he wrote. He's done several books with Alan Sherman on Hello Mudda, Hello Fada.
Yes, of course.
He did the artwork for that. And Al Campanis, who used to be one of the managers of the Los Angeles Dodgers, he did the artwork for Roger the Dodger. So. He's done a lot of books that have been based on true stories about Thomas Nast, political cartoonist, and the SPCA and Al Capone. So he's really kept himself, you know, as a bridge builder. I look at him. He really touched many different generations and different socioeconomic classes.
And was he drawing and active to right till his late 80s and 90s, or was he like out of commission towards the last few years?
Oh, I think it was just about the last, you know, 3 years, 4 years, you know, of his life, where physically, you know, it was a little challenging for him. But well into his 80s, this man was still sending ideas to HarperCollins for new books.
Well, that's cool. So when was the last time you met him, saw him?
Well, physically saw him, it was when he was in his 80s. I mean, he was still coming out here, actually. I certainly have always kept in touch with him on the phone. Even in his last few years of his life, I would be on the phone with him maybe once a week, a couple times a month. He was a very, you know, he adored his younger, my mother was 8 years younger, and there was a very close relationship. So he's been a very close uncle, even though there have been 3,000 miles, you know, between us.
Because he lived in New York the whole time, pretty much.
Well, he lived in New York, and then in about 1950, he fled the cold country and went down to Miami Beach.
Well, that's where the Jews go. That's what we do. Yeah, okay. Any last words with Carol Edmonston, who administers SidHoff.org? Any really memorable anecdotes or stories about the life of cartoonist Sid Hoff?
Well, I always like to share this story. My parents, as I said, traveled with Sid and his wife a lot, so they were on a cruise once. They were in Spain. They had stopped and got off the boat and went to a restaurant to get something to eat, and Sid really wanted to have some smoked salmon. And the four of them, none of them could speak the language. There was a language barrier, so Sid did what Sid knows how to do. He took out a pen, and on the linen tablecloth, he sat there and he drew a picture of a salmon with a pipe in its mouth and the smoke coming up, and in 5 minutes, the man had his smoked salmon. So,
marvelous.
You know, this is a great gift in having the ability to use that pen and paper and get what it is you want and need. And
lovely. And thank you, Carol Edmonston, for bringing us the gift of his memory of Sid Hoff's cartoons. And his. Can people go to SidHoff.org and see, what can they see there?
Oh, I hope your listeners do visit SidHoff.org. There's a tremendous amount up on that website. In fact, there's an 18-page autobiography that Sid wrote in 1988. There are some of his cartoons, some family pictures, some articles, some interviews. There's actually an interview that was done by the Japanese version of Esquire magazine. I have no idea. No idea what it says at all, but it's up on that website, Dave.
Well, good.
All the political stuff about Sid is what I'm hanging on to, hopefully, to turn around and spin in a book. There's the book list is up there. So there's a tremendous amount of reading. And the mural that he painted for the Cafe Society in New York long ago is actually, there's a picture of it on the website because I discovered it with his signature missing in a local restaurant that reproduced it 41 times. So I'm still trying to find this.
Where the original is.
Where the original, which I believe is floating somewhere around, you know, in the Hamptons. It was owned by Randolph Duke at one time, the fashion designer, who sold it about 8-10 years ago to an antique dealer back there. So all of that is up on the website as well.
SidHoff.org. That's the place to go. Can you buy any of his books there, or do you have to go to Amazon and eBay and places like that?
Well, the best place that you can go, I found most of his books through a lot of the places like abebooks.com. You put Sid's name in, and many of them will come up.
Yeah. Ex Libris also?
Right. I was surprised. You could spend an entire day combing through and finding his books.
Well, worth it, I would think, to see his images, to see his designs, and his words, too, since he wrote a lot of the books, and very much worth it to hear about him from his niece, Carol Edmonston. Thank you so much for joining us in the neighborhood.
My pleasure. You have a great day, Dave. Hi, this is Carol Edmonston, and I am the niece of the late Sid Hoff, the acclaimed children's author and cartoonist, and I'm here today with Dave WGBB Freeport.
Dave's gone by, Dave's gone by, there goes the neighborhood, Dave's gone by, there goes the neighborhood.
There goes the neighborhood, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you've been enjoying this episode of Dave's Gone By as we move into Monday morning. Yeah.
Didn't know your last name was GBB Freeport.
Well, it's on GBB Freeport. That's our legal ID right there, WGBB Freeport.
Well, she said you're listening to Dave, WGBB Freeport.
Yeah, because I think there was something I had to edit in the middle of that, and I kind of had to lump it together. But I do want to thank so much Carol Edmonston, and for her lovely chat about Sid Huff. And to find out more about that, where do I have her her email in front of me? SidHuff.org. Yeah, that would do it.
I'll just look her up in the phone book.
That's true, but remember, it's SYDHuff.org. And also her own website is SacredDoodles.com. Two D's in there. Actually, there are three D's. SacredDoodles.com.
The four D's, because the D in sacred, huh?
Let's count those D's again, Jeff. Sacred,
one.
Do, two, dull, three.
Oh,
three D's.
Two. Uh-huh.
That's right. I mean, it's easier for me because I've got the paper in front of me. But see, this is like our downtime. We've done most of the important part of it. We've done pretty much all the important part of the show. Now Jeff and I get to unwind a little bit. We can hang out a little bit.
Let's call what's-his-name back.
He's probably sleeping at work in the morning, though. But I want to thank David Sheward so much for being so interesting and so
knowledgeable
about the theater and about Equus. And everybody, go get his new book about George C. Scott. It's coming out next
week.
What's
it called?
First major bio of George C. Scott. It's The Rage and the Something.
Glory.
Glory. Glory and Rage. Rage and Glory. Wasn't that a TV show with that woman from Regis and Kelly Ripa? Something like that. I don't know. Wasn't she on Hope and Glory? Come on, work with me on this.
That was Hope and Faith.
Hope, was it really? Hope and Faith? Wasn't there an And Glory TV show as well? Somewhere? Sometime? Somewhere,
glory
sometime, there'll be glory a rage and a glory. Let's do some... Oh, let's do our sponsors now instead of waiting until 1 o'clock in the morning to get them out of the way. So we like to tell people about the folks who support this show and invite you to advertise and become...
Well, you have to. If you like the show, you have to support them.
That's right.
Otherwise, there's no show.
So, everybody support Hewlett Minuteman Press. They are
the Copy Kings of Broadway.
10% off any job, big or small, for Dave's Gone By listeners.
If I come in and want a 7-cent copy, how much would that cost me?
Well,
with my 10% off,
it would probably be for one page. I don't know if you could get maybe a 5-cent copy or something like that. And then
but
it would be 10% off that, so you probably get it for 6 cents or 5 or 6 cents. No, six. There you go.
Then you can see dead people.
The 6 cents. That's like very good. But if you had a $100 job, then it would be only 90. If you had a $1,000 job, it'd be only 900. So being
and if
that
job was $87.50, how much, Dave?
Well, it'd be $8.75 less than $87.50.
Which
you
is?
Do the math. I don't know. You do it.
No.
Okay, and then there am I.
I answer the question.
But the folks at Hewlett Minuteman Press will do the math for you, because they're going to give you that discount if you're a Dave's Gone By listener. Stop in. Go get printing done, binding done. Put your logo on mugs, on pens, on keychains. Get your, well, you're a little late
talk
for the Russian Hanukkah cards. You can do Halloween cards, Thanksgiving cards, and
Christmas cards.
Hanukkah cards. That's right. Hewlett Minuteman Press, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett. Next to what was
the defunct Lohman Shoe Store.
That's right. There's no more Lohman Shoes, but there's plenty of printing to be done at Minuteman. Oh, and let's see. Also, our sponsors, the Woodrow Delicatessen.
Woodrow.
I call it Woodrow, so when people look for it on the internet, they leave off that second W that should be there but isn't, because it's
leave
Woodrow.
Off the second W for annoyance.
Yeah. No, we got to work on that a little more.
Well, leave off the second...
W for roast beef.
W for a wrong way to spell this.
But let me tell you something. The Woodrow Delicatessen, it's one of the best delis on Long Island, which makes it one of the best delis in New York, which makes it one of the best delis in the whole country and the world. Fabulous food. Fresh. Everything there.
That,
freshly made.
That roast beef is so fresh you want to slap it.
But I'm bummed. Roast beef, pastrami, brisket. Pastrami is the only thing they can't make on site.
Why is that?
Because it has to be smoked. They need a smokehouse. But all the other turkey, freshly baked off the bone.
And you can't smoke in the store.
No smoking. They were, after all, that you can't even get a glass of wine. I think they still serve that. So if you want a little wine with your dinner,
they got a wine license.
I guess they must. It's a nice place. It's a Hamish, homey neighborhood kind of
thing. A nice place. A good place, right? Right.
Right.
I promise you'll be happy.
And let me tell you, know why you'll be happy also? Because, Mr. Fiddler on the Roof Man, because, okay, you know, you think a sandwich is kind of expensive, but it's kosher meat. It's really, you know, they charge it a little more than you would get in a
regular place. $2.50 a sandwich, I hear.
No. Oh. Look, is this 1970? No. No, it's not. But you go there, okay? You sit down. Let's say you have, you're with a friend. You have two sandwiches. They also just throw bowls of pickles at you and coleslaw. And you also get a big thing of bread. And you get it all together and with a beverage.
It's like a restaurant.
The two of you will get out of there for $30, you know. Now, what other kinds of restaurant are
How
you
How much does it cost you to get in?
You're on fire, Mr. Goodman. The Woodrow.
A place so fresh you want to slap it.
There you go. Something like that.
Well, I would give him a tagline.
Yeah.
Leave off the last W for whoops. Where is it again?
Where? Peninsula Shopping Center.
No, leave off the last W for where is it again? The Peninsula Shopping Center. I know, but leave off the last W for where is
what's
it again?
Yeah, but what's a W food? What's a W food? Ooh, wow. I'm blanking. This
wasabi. Wasabi.
Yeah, well, they have horseradish. You can order horseradish with your... I don't know if they have gefilte fish. They have stuffed cabbage, and it's delicious.
And stuffed durma?
Oh, yeah. Good stuffed durma. They're good french fries. Their onion rings, sometimes really good, sometimes not so. I've called them on that.
So Dave is not recommending the onion rings?
Not necessarily. Ask the waiters. The waiters will tell you everything.
And what's the owner's name, Steve?
Norm. Norm and Steve are the two owners. Norm basically started the place.
So you have to go, you have to walk in the place and go, Norm!
Yeah.
Just like
Cheers.
Just like
Cheers. And that'll be Norm. He'll probably be at the register, or Steve will.
He'll go, buddy, event!
Or you go up to the counter, get a great hot dog, get a delivery.
Oh, yeah, I got such a headache. Buddy, event!
So, on to the next sponsor, because it's not fair to just talk about the Woodrow. We've been on them for about 4 minutes. So
that's okay. I'm just trying to figure out what we're leaving the last W off for. Let's have a contest. If our viewers can...
Our listeners can think of...
Then I will I will personally pay for lunch at the Woodrow for two if we get a good tagline from
that. That is nice, man. That is a great contest. Think of a great tagline. It doesn't have to be the W thing, although that would be really good. But if you think of a really good motto, a slogan for the Woodrow, because if you go on their website, they have a website, and it's good, but they need a little sizzle. They need a little oomph. Yeah. So give them that oomph. Come up with a really a slogan, a tagline that all of us go, wow. And Jeff, this is a promise. Jeff is going to buy you lunch for two at the Woodrow Delicatessen. That's pretty cool. I like that.
See?
So get and email your entries to davesgongby@aol.com. That's D-A-V as in Victor, E-S, davesgongby@aol.com. And get them to me by next Saturday. We'll have the winners on Sunday.
But next month is fine.
Well, we'll see. We're doing this a little late.
Genius takes time. I think we should run the contest for like a month or two.
Let's see. Well, we're just beginning October. Let's do it until the end of October.
No, but next week is already the 12th.
Yeah, and then the
20th. So I think maybe we should go to like till Thanksgiving.
That's a long time.
Well, they have to think about it.
Slogan doesn't take 2 months to think about. They think about it, it either pops in their head and it works or it doesn't. We're not asking them to write 5 chapters of a novel.
Well, if we don't like any of the slogans?
Then nobody wins.
Then we extend the contest.
Okay, if we only get... Then we go to November. But if we get one that really works, that really pops, someone's going to get a free lunch on Jeff.
And who says
let me rephrase that.
Who says there's no free lunch?
There you go. Moving on, speaking of Jeff, you do what in your daytime, and what's your regular job?
I decorate parties.
Toilets?
Parties.
Oh, parties. Yes, how do you decorate parties?
Nicely.
Yeah, and Do you paint the walls?
No.
Do you put up streamers?
Sometimes.
Oh, okay. Let's see, what else? How else do you put up potted plants and flowers?
No, but sometimes we move them around.
Okay. To make room for what?
Balloons!
And?
More balloons!
And?
More balloons!
And centerpieces!
I was just watching you. He's so frustrated. He gets the, and?
Well, because I didn't know whether you're looking at me. I know you said balloons, but I'm more impressed by centerpieces. Because balloons, you blow up balloons, you tie them together, big whoop.
But you, the balloon sculptures are amazing.
They are, but they're all sort of... I'm more impressed at the arts and the craftsmanship it takes to make centerpieces, because you do these designs...
Or the foam core, the glitter. I'm the glitter king of the world.
What are some of the recent themes that you've done for parties? Or
well,
in the
we've
past
done,
2 months?
Well, we can't say that I've done Disney, because I can't do that without authorization.
Oh, okay, oops. You did Disney-esque stuff.
Oh, well, we took an order. We're doing your favorite theme, balls.
Beg what? What? What?
Wait. Oh, P.S. We need a. What is it when you put a legal thing on it?
A disclaimer?
We need a disclaimer here. Just to make everyone know, Dave is not gay.
Oh, yeah. No,
we must put a legal disclaimer on here.
But you can honestly be having a party where the design theme is testicles.
No,
even Tim
balls.
Gunn, much as he would
no,
like
balls.
To see that. But no, okay.
You know what we do?
What?
We make it work.
Yeah, oh, okay.
We give Tim Gunn.
No, but wait. So you have, it's about basketballs, hot
sports balls.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. You've also done, what, Simpsons parties, haven't you? Or
yeah, but we can't say them.
Oh, okay.
Once again.
I see, so all the generics.
We do a lot
theater
of sports,
themed,
theater,
yeah.
Broadway, New York.
Okay, New York themed, got it.
We do, Mardi Gras.
Oh, nice, okay.
A purple, gold, and green.
Yeah, that must look...
It's nice.
Nice, okay. Well, it's a party.
I like it.
See, Jeff actually does have...
We do New Year's parties.
Yeah.
We'll be doing... I'm working on the Temple B'nai Torah's New Year's party now.
Ooh, where are they located?
They're on Jerusalem Avenue in Montoy.
Oh, okay. Not you work out of Massapequa somewhere, so... People in that area or anywhere across Long Island, if you're having a party, if you're thinking of having a party and you want it to look good.
And if you don't have any place to send New Year's Eve, think about Temple B'nai Torah for New Year's Eve.
At least they'll have good decorations. They can't vouch for the food.
And the food is, it might be, we're talking to our favorite caterer.
Oh, yeah.
Larry.
Larry at Galaxy Caterers.
There you go.
He was nice enough. He catered something 2 years ago.
He catered our New Year's party.
Yeah, that was nice. Now, not this year, but 2 years.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
Our New Year's. What do we call it? The New Year's.
Well, that one you.
The Suckfest.
Delightfully called the Craptacular. I was under directives from the radio station to keep it, you know, all G-rated and nice, and which we did as best we could until some people drunk called in, said some things on the air. But you started the ball rolling by calling, bursting out of your mouth, and here we are at the Craptacular. I'm like, no. No, this is a real party.
Do you know that I heard curses on Channel 13?
For what show? When?
They dropped the F-bomb.
Where? What?
On Channel 13.
No, what show, dude?
I don't know. They're like movies. They just didn't edit it out of it.
Okay. They're really not supposed to. I mean, they try and be cool with it. I know I get shocked when I see sometimes on cable. But I'm not talking about HBO kind of cable. Some of those other, like USA and Spike, where they'll drop a
like
word.
Like the Playboy Channel. Why are they...
Well, I remember as a kid, Channel 13 was trying to be hip and relevant, and the one show that they made an exception for, and that's why we all watched it, was Scare It Straight. You remember that?
Yes.
Way, way back, early 70s, I think, well, maybe mid-70s, they got these kids who were, shall we say, in danger of being bad kids.
They were bad kids.
They were recidivist kids. They were
in danger of being criminals.
Exactly. Or some of them already were past that danger and well into the criminality stage. So they bring them into prison. You all know this. And they basically get shouted at by some very, very scary people. I mean, they couldn't be... they knew these people weren't going to touch them or hit them. And yet, it was just scary enough for a bunch of 15-year-olds to
well,
be
he also sat down like in groups and talked to them.
Yeah, but after the yelling. First comes the yelling and the, like, you know, screaming the hair off their heads. And then they're in the mood to sit down and listen.
Welcome to life in prison.
Yeah. And so the one thing, there was disclaimers all over the place. And it said, look, we're trying to present this as a real urban, gritty thing to scare your kids straight. And to watch how these kids were scared straight. And we're not going to whitewash
it. Especially because some of these people were yelling about sexual things they were going to do with them.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Huh. You would remember. No. I just remember more about violence, about the threat.
Yeah.
The imminent daily threat of violence made very clear to these kids in language that was shocking back then to hear on Channel 13.
Shocking to me now.
The only other real Channel 13 thing where that has come up was when I was interviewing Michael Riedel, who obviously he is the New York Post theater columnist, and he was with us on our Tony show, and he also was with us actually on a previous Tony show as well. So,
well, he just phoned in. He actually showed up.
He showed up for the Tony show this year, which was really great. He was a wonderful co-host. And I asked him at one point...
It was known as craptacular, too.
No, it wasn't great. It was rather marvelous. So he had said that he never had any problem as far as censorship or difficulty or bleeping with the guests that he and his co-host have on their show Theater Talk on Channel 13 on public TV every week, where they interview all these famous theater people.
Like
except her. Elaine Stritch. Stritch, you cannot control Elaine Stritch. She's like Lauren Bacall. She's an old broad, and she'll say what she wants, how she wants, in as colorful language as she can possibly
choose. Merman! That Merman!
Like Merman. So, he was sure. He didn't know how Channel 13 would approach it. And they just let it go. She's Stritch. So here she is, Elaine Stritch, cursing up a storm on Channel 13.
She is Stritchy, actually.
Stritchy. So, God bless her. She's the one person who could get away with it on Theater Talk, I guess, because she's old.
And Cloris Leachman can curse on Dancing with the Stars, too.
Did she?
Oh, yeah.
But did they bleep her?
Yeah.
Well, no, they didn't bleep Stritch, that's what I'm saying.
But you saw her mouthing words.
Good Lord, what was she saying?
Well, I can tell you, but not in the colorful language that she right. did, even though it's after 12.
Even so.
But the Carrie Ann Inaba gave her, like, a 5, and she goes, you B-word!
Oh, the B-word? That was it?
No, she was like hers. And
oh, there's more.
She's hilarious. I mean, she is playing, you know, she's a very funny lady, Clara
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she knows how to act. And she's, like, been all over. She's dancing like crap.
Oh.
And she's getting lower scores, but the people love her.
Well, I read in one of these things, it was probably the Long Island Press, where they said, look, Cloris, we love you. We don't want to see you go, but you have to go. You can't.
Yeah, but she didn't go yet.
I know. That's what they're saying. It's like, you've had your thing. We love
but
you.
But this is, it's like the year that Jerry Springer was on it, and he was dancing terribly.
And they kept him for at least a couple of weeks, too.
Well, they kept him for like 5-6 weeks.
Okay, yeah.
It's like, and I think he was the one who goes, vote me off already. I don't want to be here.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Cloris, I think, had something to prove, though. I mean, when she didn't get cast in Young Frankenstein.
Yeah, she was upset, and she had actually petitioned them for like 3 or 4 seasons to get on the show.
On which? On Dancing?
Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, wow.
I don't even watch this show, but the Cloris Leachman thing is fascinating to me, and I like her.
And bless her. And she's in her 80s, and she... Again, I don't know if doing that show proves that she could do a Broadway musical 8 times a week, but she could probably do it 5 times a week, you know?
Well, it doesn't prove anything, but it's just like, it's just fun to watch her because she's nuts on the show. She's absolutely crazy.
Good old Cloris.
It's between her and the moments on the show have been her and then... what's the guy from NSYNC? The gay guy from NSYNC?
Oh, Lance Bass?
Yeah, Lance Bass. He kissed a woman at his partner.
Why?
Because the song said so.
I mean, kissed or on the cheek kissed?
Well, they tried to do it, like, serious.
Oh, dear.
Kiss on the lips.
Which and, lips? No.
And everyone, like, laughed.
Oh, okay.
My Amazing Race.
They're still having an Amazing Race.
It's Amazing Race 12 or 13, I think.
Yeah. Where
13 races around the world. How great is that?
Okay.
They won another Emmy, by the way.
Oh, wow.
They are still the only show since the inception of the Emmy Award for Best Reality Programming to win it.
Wow.
They're the only show. And they and every year they go, we're not voting for it again. But it's a brilliantly done show. It's just a great show.
I have to admit, especially when my back was out, and I had to watch a lot of television because there's not much else I could do. This is a few weeks back. I was watching the one with Tim Gunn, the designer.
You're either in or you're out.
Troy hates when I do that. But that's the only other thing Heidi Klum says. It's like, one of you will be out. And she said it four times a freaking show. It's like, I know, we know, Heidi. We know. Change it up a little. Yes, we know. One of them will be out.
But Tim Gunn, I like, was okay, people, just make it work.
Was he that gay in the first season?
I think so.
I mean, he just seems much gayer now.
He's free to be himself.
I guess so. Yeah, now that he's famous, he's got his own show. Which, that I haven't seen. I don't have time for that. But I do enjoy, I don't know why, but I do, well, maybe because I enjoy looking at
Project
lives.
Runway. That's
Project the Runway, that's the one. And also the idea that they have to build something, create it from an idea. And I do find that fascinating. I do like that, because I have no concept. You can hand me fabric, scissors, a sewing machine, give me 15 hours, and you would see me with fabric, scissors, and a sewing machine, just pointing.
And probably some stitches in your hand.
Yeah, it would be a smock. Maybe I'd just wrap it around like a little towel, and I'm done. I would have no clue how to cut a dress.
So what are the contestants like? Who do you like as the contestants this season?
Have you been watching?
No, I don't care.
Oh, I thought we could talk about this. Oh, it's a cable show, that's right. Well, everybody hates this one woman. She's kind of a southerny girl.
Is she itchy?
I think her name is Kali or Kalu. By the way, if anybody wants to talk about any of these reality shows, why not give us a call? 631-888-8811. Area code 631-888-8811. If you've been watching Project Runway, if you've been watching The Amazing Race.
Or Survivor.
Or Survivor. Are you still thinking Big Brother, too?
Big Brother ended.
Ah!
Big Brother's a summer show.
So 1984 finally ended. All right, that's good.
No, they'll be back next year.
Oh, so this particular Big Brother ended. Yeah. Okay.
They only are in the house for 90 days. It's all they could take in the house.
No. I don't know how long. Does Project Runway, I guess, only last about 12 weeks or however many?
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, it's condensed. They do the show every week, but it's probably they probably do 2 weeks of shows in 1 week or 3 weeks of shows in 1 week.
So, yeah, that's right. But the woman, the girl, and I hope people will back me up on this at 631-888-811. I think it's Kayla, something like that. She's always, nothing's ever either her fault or she's always.
Does she cry? I like when they cry.
Well, they're towards the end, like in the later episodes, they're all crying because they're all so scared and they're all so nervous. Yeah, but she's just like, it's not even that she's a bitch, but no matter, she cannot take criticism.
Oh.
And I know what that is because I have a hard time taking criticism too. But she's to the umph degree. I mean, any suggestion that she's missing something or that this piece doesn't really fit the spirit, well, of course it does. She has so much sense of herself as being right, which I guess you have to be in a certain way. But it is limiting, and it's annoying. She's pretty obnoxious after a while. And they're all sick of her, and Tim Gunn is sick of her, and all the other contestants are
sick. So why isn't she out?
Because she's also clever, and she's got something. But I don't know, I think the black guy's going to win. He seems to have it the most together most of the time.
Is he a snap, snap, snap gig black guy?
No, he's more of a, I think he's gay, but he's more of a, just together,
a regular black
normally.
Gay guy.
He's not like Suede. There was one character who called himself Suede and spoke of himself in the third person. Suede is going to win this challenge, snap.
There you go. Suede didn't. And Suede is oats.
Suede was in for a few weeks, but then, he was he had a good sense of humor, though. He wasn't so obnoxious as this woman.
Yeah.
I think they're just keeping her, also because she stirs up the mix a little bit. And she gets to be the bad guy. She's the villain.
It's conflict.
Yeah. Because the other winners in the last thing who are going to New York for the final stuff are one black guy who's very, very good, a black woman who has a real great sense of color, and then there's a sort of a farm girl, quiet girl.
So you're following us now, huh?
I've told you, I've been watching Project Runway. and just to remind people that I am not gay, there are worse things than looking at Heidi Klum for 10 minutes every episode, because, you know, she's Heidi Klum, for crying out loud. And I like to hear her say,
you're either in or you're out.
One of you will be out. They walk into a room. Wait, these aren't showers.
No. No, say it your way again.
One of you will be out.
No.
Auf Wiedersehen.
No. Auf Wiedersehen.
She said that too.
I know. No, but one of you will be out. I know nothing.
She's Colonel Klum. In Tim Gunn's Heroes. We have, I believe, a caller.
So let's put him live on the air.
WGBB, Freeport. Dave's gone by. Who's on the phone?
David, Pam.
Pam, number one fan. Man, don't you have to work tomorrow?
Who's it, Pam?
Pam from, I won't say where, but I can say you work in the library.
From the library.
Yeah. How are you, Pam?
It's been such a long time since you called me.
I couldn't make your telethon watching party.
Oh yeah, she was naughty. She was invited. We had when I was off.
The Chabad telethon party, you missed?
That week that I wasn't here, and we played a repeat. Yeah. I was doing a Chabad telethon party, and Pam was invited with her husband, and it was going to be this whole orgy, and we were going to get them both in bed and do great stuff to them, and nothing. Nothing.
Well, I was supposed to bring the bacon wrapped shrimp.
That's right, for the
Jewish
party.
Yeah, but I actually got really sick. I was at home for about a week.
That's because Dave made you think of him naked.
Ew. I don't even want to think of myself naked.
The shrimp reminds me maybe of him naked. I don't know.
Smaller.
Oh, gee, I think we've lost that call. No, just kidding. So what did you have, mono or stereo or something like that? What did you have?
Diarrhea.
I had just had a really bad cold and fever and... It just came upon me, like, one night I was just sitting in the living room, and I felt like...
You felt like rabbis were dancing in your intestines.
Yeah. Oh, boy! Yeah.
So, I don't know, I just felt like my whole body was aching, so I actually sent myself into a NyQuil-induced coma.
Ooh, I love those.
Aren't those fun?
Cherry-flavored or menthol?
Cherry. Ugh, menthol, yuck. My sister and I, well, she was not in agreement, but I was telling her, when we go on the Amazing Race, so I'm planning on submitting an application. Not that I'm going to be accepted, but I'm not going to carry those big, giant
knapsacks
or...
But
what do they need that for?
That's what the clothes are in. They have to have bulky clothes because they don't know if they're going to cold climates.
There was something that your friend, the black guy, said. Is it okay to say black?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
African-American?
Negro, those are about the only three at this point.
Okay.
All the others.
The black man said, you know, he says, I hope, I'm so glad you made it, or something, and he said something like, I'm so glad you didn't make it before.
Yeah.
I don't know, however he spun it, it was.
And he just doesn't, he was.
Schwarzer. We could go with Schwarzer.
Dave.
A lot.
Just sit and listen.
Okay.
And you would. Talk about me, please. But, I just don't, I don't like him. I don't know why. She seems like, okay.
He's like not, for me, I'm like, I do not dislike him, and I have no opinion. I'm just, not because he's black.
I wasn't crazy.
Because I don't know, he didn't.
It's amazing the level of white guilt in a conversation. Like, it has absolutely nothing to do.
Well,
with race, it's about a race, but the Amazing Race.
No, it doesn't.
But we can't criticize. We can't say I don't like him, but it's not because I promise.
But
no.
See, that's what you caught up on, and I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, you
just trying to protect his.
No, I said I didn't like the black couple, and then all of a sudden you give him the.
Yeah, all right. I did sort of lead the lead on that.
Yeah.
Because what happened was I was talking to someone else here today. I won't name names, and they were. On a rant about going on an audition, this young fella who was trying to be an actor, and he's also in radio and stuff like that. And he went out for an audition that was incredibly unprofessional. It was for one of these Tyler Perry kind of dumb black movies.
Okay.
You know, these comedy things. And it wasn't Tyler Perry, but it was a Tyler Perry wannabe.
And he I actually saw that movie, Why Did I Ever Get Married? And I thought it was a very good movie.
Oh, okay.
See?
Why are you watching Tyler Perry movies?
Well,
one of
my coworkers
actually requested the DVD, and so she's like, you should watch this. This is really good.
Oh.
And it really was.
Okay. But this was imagine him without a budget or talent. And these were people who were just so disorganized and kind of just bad at what they were doing.
So,
I'm just saying he went to this audition, and he was just shocked at the level of, and so he went on this rather racist rant, which shocked even me.
I can't believe we're talking about racism now, and we should be talking about the race.
Amazing racism.
but also, the couple that, and then the, when they raced the nerds and the professional football player and his sort of ex-wife, they and they got there and they said, oh, they were very happy that they won the leg. And when you win the leg, you get
all the toes.
You get a
toes.
But you get, I try to ignore these little things.
Oh, okay.
When you win a leg of the race,
yes,
you also win a prize. And this leg, they gave him two.
It's lunch for two at the Woodrow.
at
the Woodrow Delicatessen. Yum, yum.
Actually won two ATVs.
Oh.
And they were so excited about it, and they were so happy, and you could say that, and they got interviewed, and they said, oh, it's really helping our marriage to work together. And then the guys who came in just after them said, and it was so nice, you just wanted to love them. They go, well,
they should have actually been first.
They should have, but they didn't. But they weren't, because their cab was slow, the other cab was fast, and they ran faster. So the people coming first always deserve to come first. But the guys turned to them and said, well, if it helped your marriage improve, the ATVs are meaningless to us. How nice is that?
Now, see, I keep telling my wife I deserve to come first, but she doesn't she doesn't buy that.
But, yeah, I guess. She doesn't like shrimp.
And just sometimes she never comes at all.
Oh.
Arnold, are you listening to this? My husband has a radio on in his room so that it doesn't interfere, but that he can listen.
Okay. But
how long have you been married, Pam?
I've been married
20 minutes.
For 13 years.
Oh, congratulations. Yay.
Oh, it's your black cat anniversary.
Is that what it's called?
Is that what it's...
No.
What do you get
for 13? You're thinking of, like, Halloween? I don't know.
I'm thinking, I'm lucky, 13.
Oh, well, yeah, you get a pumpkin or something.
It's your divorce anniversary.
Oh, God forbid.
Oh, that's not going to happen.
Good.
No, you guys seem, I mean, I met your husband once, but you seem really suited. They both like to motorcycle and go places. They're very...
Would you like those two ATVs?
Maybe. I wouldn't know. Actually, maybe, because they're probably very good on gas.
Yeah.
I could go to the library.
And then a lot of them got the one where they had, there was this, like, this, what was it, pit stop? Or there was a word that in Spanish sounded like it was the pit stop, but it wasn't.
Pit stopo.
I know.
It's not Spanish. It's Portuguese.
It's like Portuguese, right? Sorry.
Pit stopo.
I don't speak Spanish, the two bells, the southern bells. I don't speak Spanish.
Well, they're not 100% there.
Yeah, well, they're Southern beauty pageant queens. And I almost said something which would have totally been wrong, but almost like Sarah Palin. Ooh!
Mm-hmm.
I love her.
What? Oh, no.
Wasn't she a beauty pageant queen?
Yeah, she was, actually.
I know, but I love her.
And
I,
she's
I
very cute. She's, you know, she's not quite in Tina Fey's league, but she's got something. She's got sex appeal. No, I'm just laughing. I'm not kidding. I think they're kind of hot.
All right.
But I don't like what she represents. Are you going to vote for McCain Palin, Pam?
Well, it's kind of a secret ballot, so maybe we shouldn't put Pam on.
Yeah, it's private.
That's private?
I'm not going to tell you because you're going to, like, whatever, I'll tell you.
Oh, but you're not going to tell me because I'm going to harass you. I think I can guess.
Okay.
I think I can guess where your vote's going. You're not going to vote for the black man.
Not because he's black.
I knew it.
You know, and that's a hard... See, I hate that about that. If you say something negative about a black person, you have to immediately qualify that it's not because of the fact that they're black.
Right.
So I don't even...
some reason, he scares me. Like, I don't know. I have, this uneasy feeling.
But you know,
feeling.
They came out... They came out last week and they said an actuarial table. And they said it's more likely than not that John McCain will not last 8 years.
I know.
Right. Yeah. Four. What about four?
No, he will last 4 years.
In good condition?
According to Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah.
Who leads?
He says that's a tactic and that the media, the drive-by media, that's what he calls it, the left, says that it's a tactic so that we will say, oh, well, I shouldn't even go because Obama's winning. Like, what's the point?
The tactic is to say quite legitimately that there's, I would say, a 50-50 shot or more that sometime within the first 4 years, if McCain gets elected, he'll be on an operating table for something, and Sarah Palin will be the effective commander-in-chief for at least a few weeks. Would you not grant me that? I mean, the guy's got face cancer, you know, and things removed from his jaw. And he's 72. Now, he may live to 92, but...
Yeah, his mom is feisty.
His mother's still alive. That's like really 90. Whacked out, huh?
Okay, well, it is. But remember Reagan? Reagan lasted his whole 8 term.
Yeah.
His whole 8 years. But the last 2 years, he wasn't quite fully President Reagan anymore. He was little Ronnie again, pooping his drawers and going to Bitburg, Germany. So by the time 2012 rolls around, John McCain will be 76, having battled cancer and having been in a prison camp for 4 years. I mean, I don't think he'll be in the best condition. And then, who's going to step up to the plate but this Twinkie from Alaska?
By the way, which is, by the way, an energy-producing state.
That's right. And she's cute, and she's a really marvelous communicator. I will give her that.
Yes.
But we have issues as far as...
You didn't watch the whole thing. You didn't see her wink at America like 3 times.
Well, I've seen it on every newspaper. She's a very cute winker, but, okay. It's the winker versus the wanker.
By the way, we may not answer the questions the way you or the moderator would like.
Well, what do you see in Palin? Because I kind of like McCain. I just wish he were a Democrat. But what do you see in Palin?
Estrogen.
That's a question for you, Pam. I don't think...
Oh, I know. I'm thinking. I don't...
Oh, well.
We'll have none of that
right
on
there.
This show.
Well, I'm sorry?
We'll have none of that on this show.
He has the same... I don't know. If I find the same things that, values-wise...
Are you pro-gun? Do you believe in the right to...
I'm not... I know people who have guns, and I know this is such a crazy answer. I'll tell you why I like her. Honestly.
Yeah.
Because... She is a Christian, and I believe in this. I'm a Christian also, and I believe in the same. We have the same beliefs.
But Obama is a Christian too, you know, a serious one. He was, you know, he happens to have that Muslim middle name, but his dad abandoned him 6 months in. So Obama's a Christian. Biden's a Christian. McCain's a Christian.
I feel like for some reason, I'm sure it has a lot to do with the news that I listen to, and it seems to be on the conservative side, and I think that Obama may be...
What?
I don't even know why I'm having this discussion.
Obama is black! Get over it!
Don't have the discussion. You're just falling into a pit.
I can't. It's because I don't...
I'm not trying to open a pit here. I really want to know...
And what newspapers does Sarah Palin read? All of them. Which ones? All of them.
Okay.
I didn't hear what you...
Did you see Katie Couric interviews?
I hate Katie Couric.
Why? What'd she do to you?
She didn't... See, because I like Sarah, and I feel like she was like...
She didn't do anything bad. You watch the interviews. All she asked for was a specific answer to any question. Because what happens, you ask Sarah Palin a question... And she'll answer another question that she wants you to ask her. She'll just say something and go, well, and then she'll change the subject. But
I feel like I'm doing that right now because I don't want to answer these questions.
There's no question. This is not a question to you. But on the interview that I was talking to you about, just now, they're walking down. She goes, how do you keep abreast of the international scene from Alaska? She goes, well, I read all the media material. And she goes,
what do you read?
And she said, oh, all the stuff that's around the office. She goes, what's around the office? Oh, all the papers. Really? All the papers?
Name one.
It was like, real. She said, tell me a specific paper that you read. And she goes, oh, well, I don't, we don't have to go into detail. Like, what?
Just mention the Anchorage Daily something. I mean, how tough is
that? Maybe the papers, the things that she has on her desk have celebrities on the covers. I don't know.
I know. No. But
I didn't want to say.
No,
people.
They asked her.
She could say the New York freaking Times.
Well, she.
Oh, by the way, Jeff, could you please? Oh, no. Pam is our phone guest at the moment. Pam, would you like to do our legal ID?
Okay, I don't know what to say. What
you have
do you
to
do?
Say this radio station's name.
The call letters.
Oh.
And where we're located.
Freeport? Wait.
Yes.
WGBB. What's the number?
No.
You don't even have to say the number. It's just the call
letters. And town.
Right.
WGBB, Freeport, New York.
Beautiful. Wonderful. Even embellished with that New York part. It was perfect. Thank you, Pam. And we're leaving now.
Freeport.
Just,
Caribbean Island.
It's just.
I wonder if that would negate the legality of it. I don't know. If you confuse people, if you say WGBB Freeport, Canada.
No, because
Freeport,
because
Alaska.
Then it wouldn't be part of the United States. It's an
Freeport,
idea.
Maine. Something like
I
that.
Said Freeport, Alaska.
Yeah, you're not listening.
That was my Sarah Palin impression.
So can I ask why you are so uptight and personal about the political? Because it's a Christian thing? Is that the deal?
It's private.
Well,
a lot of people
honestly,
don't like
because
to discuss
I'm not informed enough to make a statement because I haven't done.
So she really is voting for him because Sarah Palin's a woman.
Yeah, and because Obama's black.
Oh,
just can't pull that lever.
I was really...
That lever reminds
okay,
her too
you.
Much, yeah.
His lever's bigger, though.
When I was watching the Republican convention, I was like, I don't know. But when I heard her, I just felt comfortable. I'm like, I like her. I just felt
she's
something...
She's very likable.
Yeah.
I just felt...
Well, she's very down to earth, and she's
like
not...
Her. I'm like, I really like her.
She's
a
lady. She's selling film.
Hmm.
Oh, but I still think Obama should have taken Oprah as his vice presidential.
It would have been brilliant.
I don't like Oprah either. Aye. Not because she's black. I don't
because
like her
she's
because
a black
think...
and a woman.
Oh,
two
no.
strikes right
I
there.
I don't like her because I think she... Because
she's nappy-headed, yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, Jesus.
Well, don't bring him into it. Well, you are bringing him into it. If that's the reason you're voting for Sarah Palin and McCain, because that I have to say that does bother me. If you're using the religion as an actual reason why you're voting for one of these people, that's the reason Bush got in, especially that second time, because he had all the evangelicals. He had the Christian vote, and that's just killer in this country. And
well,
look what they gave us for 8 years.
You know, I always think that I believe that the evangelical Christians, and I feel comfortable because to say make a statement like this because I'm a Christian, evangelical Christian, and the nation of Israel, like the Jewish people, we're brothers and sisters. Like we are the same. We are one.
Well, Jews are a little better.
We're united. But, yeah. Like how? So I don't understand
why
do you feel this way?
Well, I have to. The one thing, and it kills me because as much as I want the Republicans out of office for the damage they've done the last 8 years, and I don't really trust Palin's experience or her conservative views on certain things, and also, unfortunately, because McCain is on the Republican ticket, all of that. And yet, when they're making fun of Palin for saying over and over again how strongly committed this country should be to Israel, I'm very, very torn, because I'm very believing in that. I'm for her and McCain on being... ultra, ultra pro-Israel.
Pro-Israel, yeah.
And here I see a freaking Biden on TV, who I have to vote for, saying, or it may have been actually Obama himself, saying, well, you know, we don't necessarily, nobody's questioning the Bush doctrine on how we're dealing with Iran, how we're dealing with Israel. I don't want them questioning the Bush doctrine on Israel.
Do you know what the Bush doctrine is?
What?
Do you know what the Bush doctrine is?
Help Israel.
No.
And you know, keep the Middle East.
No.
What is it then?
The Bush doctrine. See, this is what no one understands. This is what Sarah Palin didn't know either. See, and also, by the way, that was the first interview with the guy from ABC, where he asked about the Bush doctrine. She just, rather than saying, I don't know what that is, or I'm unfamiliar with that term, what do you refer to as the Bush doctrine, she tried to make up the answer.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
And that's unfortunate. See, I don't like that. The Bush doctrine is what the piece of legislation that they call the Bush doctrine is when he wanted to go in and invade a country without the approval of the Congress. Because before we go in, you have to have...
You mean Iraq?
Yeah.
Okay.
So before we invaded Iraq, he didn't have congressional approval. And before that, in order to invade another country, declare war in another country...
You had to get congressional approval.
So the Bush doctrine is...
Okay.
Only about that, I should have used
the word policy, though.
Right.
What I meant was the Bush policy on Iran, Iraq, the Middle East, and Israel. And so here I am, the guy I'm going to probably vote for is saying, let's re-examine our commitment to the Bush philosophy on Israel.
No, he didn't say that.
You know.
No, he didn't say that at all. He's a very good friend of Israel.
Who is? Obama?
Biden.
Well, good. That's, thank God. I'm assuming
thank
both candidates
God. Baruch Hashem.
Well, no, that's very important to me. That's a very big deal to me. I guess I'm bringing religion into it as well.
Well, you know, it's important for the country, too, because of Israel's location. It's you know, just where it is in the middle of all those oil producers.
We can move it to Madagascar.
Well, then they won't care about it because it's not in the middle of oil-producing country.
I don't know. Have we dug in Madagascar? They probably have good coffee and stuff.
I'd like to talk to you about how did you get involved in... I mean, I know you've been on the air for many years.
Uh-huh.
How did you get involved in this radio...
Well, thank you. I you are the number one fan, I have to say. Well, you know, I studied a bit of radio when I was in college, because back then I wanted to be a jack of all trades, so I was interested in film and television and theater and radio. Any creative endeavor I could just get my hooks into and get my hands on, I wanted to do and try, because I thought I could be creative in all these disciplines. And when you're in college, you can be. You can try all these things and try and look for jobs in them, which is not quite so easy. So I did it in college, a little bit of it, and tried to keep my hand in here and there over the years. Like, I was the theater critic for WFUV for about 2 years. FUV is the Fordham University
New
station.
Jersey College. I forgot the name of
no,
it.
No, it's Fordham in the Bronx.
Oh, why was I thinking? Rutgers? What's their radio station?
I don't know if we get it too well here. RHU, maybe? Or, I'm not sure what the Rutgers station is. No, this is Fordham. Fordham is a very good station musically because it plays folk, pop, rock, Americana kind of stuff. Jeff is stealing my pants.
What? Are they still on your body? Is he actually pulling them down as we speak?
Wouldn't you like to know? No, it's warm in the studio, so I took my pants off and changed into shorts. And Jeff is removing my clothing.
Oh, so you like to work in...
Oh, I think he wants a more comfy chair, so he's stealing the chair that my clothing were on.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, please, I would like to know more of how the day's gone by.
Yeah, I wish it were a more interesting story. So anyway...
It is. I'm asking you to continue.
Oh, well, thank you. So I was doing theater criticism on FUV and some other pieces for them, and then... I liked doing it. I was a guest on a couple of radio shows that dealt with theater. So finally what happened was I was working for a company that I was there as an editor of a website for 6 years. And sometimes it was really good there and sometimes it was not so good there. And at a certain point they were developing and designing a radio program about the theater. And I asked to be part of that. And to put the shows together and
be
on the air.
Of course not.
And they said, no, we need to. That's exactly what they said.
Of course not. If that was the answer, we wouldn't be here right now.
Probably
not.
No.
Yeah.
Probably not. I would have been doing it for them on satellite radio or on their own site. So they put, I did a sample show for them. I did it, and no matter what, no matter how I tried to knock through the wall or at least claim some level of loyalty, like, look, I've been working here very hard for you people for 5.5 years. I've helped make your website one of the, you know, what it is today. The least you could do is give me a shot, but instead they had different people in mind all along, and they wanted me doing something else, and blah, 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 and they put some obstacles.
It wasn't God's will.
Poor David. It wasn't their will. It was God's will. It wasn't their freaking will.
Poor Dave didn't fit the mold.
Their idea of the mold. I make my own mold.
Dave's like Jello.
Have you seen my undershirt?
He said you have a face for radio.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks, Pam. Yeah, I'll remember. Number. You're back to number 4 fan right now.
That's okay.
But Pam's up and talking to us at 1:20 in the morning.
Well, no, also, I don't think they had I don't think they thought I had the voice for radio. To me, all kinds of voices can be interesting on radio. Howard Stern
what
doesn't
do you
have
mean
a...
you don't have a voice for radio?
Well, look at Lynn Samuels, for
example.
Yeah,
what are you...
Yeah. Or even Rush, or any of the people who are interesting radio communicators. They're not the pure announcer voice types. They're all kinds.
That's actually annoying. You know, that stereotypical, like, radio guy that, whatever, WANBC.
Exactly. There was a Pig Virus saying that to Howard Stern.
Right.
And
like
Howard
that.
Stern
yeah,
was like, no, I don't have to sound like that. I don't
you know
have
what's
to
amazing
that.
That I think something and you know what I'm thinking, which is awesome. And how you helped me go through my whole train of thought, how we got through the whole your wife's story. I don't want to say her name. Do you ever say her name over the radio?
Joyce, yeah. Not her last name.
I didn't want to.
Yeah.
Let's say her last name. Backwards.
Liu. It's kind of hard to say backwards.
I don't even remember her last name.
Okay. Well, we don't need to.
No, okay. Because
she's
so,
on the run from the feds, and it's a whole big story. So,
I like how you follow how my mind works is awesome.
Well, yeah, because secretly I'm trying to convert you to Judaism. It's a slow process, but I'll get you there. I promise. So,
notice a distinct lack of laughter there.
I chuckled or something.
Chuckled.
What am I going to say to that? Like, what can I say?
Screw you!
Or are you wearing your red Kabbalah string? No, I... Or is that just a tampon?
Kabbalah, is it? Okay. Oh, see, I don't want to get into this conversation.
Do you know what happened today?
What happened today, Jeff?
I heard on the radio it was a sad day in the New York metropolitan area. Hmm. When I talk like... Wait. I have to... If I say the words...
Well, I'll tell you what was sad. I forgot to bring the CD, but one of the founding members of the Kingston Trio died. He died yesterday or the day before. That wasn't...
It was
a...
Budgie the Whale.
Oh, yes, the last, the very first Carvel store is going to be closing in New
this
York.
This week.
Yeah, where was it?
In New Jersey.
Oh, well, it's not New York, so who cares?
Hear that commercial. You let me the man prove.
It's the one with the retarded
I
child
hate
thing.
That one.
Oh, I love that. I know. But, no, Pam did something sort of wonderful.
They're
sort
differently
of
abled, not retarded.
She went into Hewlett Minuteman Press.
And asked for a 10%.
Well, no, she said, hey, I heard you guys on the radio. It was fabulous. She's like, I heard you guys on Dave's Gone By. I think it's great that you're supporting him. You know, it's a wonderful show. Thanks for sponsoring him. She didn't buy anything.
I know.
You just went into
I knew you were going to say that. I knew the last time you said that story, you said the same thing, that I didn't buy anything.
Well, you should go make a copy.
One copy. Spend a dime. Get one penny back.
Would that kill you? So are you going to go to the Woodrow and have something to eat?
No, I'm going to go to Woodrow. Oh, can we go together as a field trip?
Sure.
And, like, record it and then air it? I don't know.
Oh, actually, that might be fun, except then they would know that you're kind of more than a listener to the show. You're a fan of the show and a friend of me, so therefore...
You're not the shill we want you to be.
Yeah. There.
Whereas if you go alone or with Arnold or with friends...
If we could ever make a date. Or the next time we have a date, we'll have it at the Woodrow.
There you go.
There you go. Or if you ever want to have a date with me, when Arnold's not looking, you know, I'm, you know, my wife's away 3 days.
And Dave's straight, by the way. Sounds gay, but he's straight.
And I haven't dated
a
Christian girl.
We can actually do that.
What, sorry?
Because, like I said, we have crazy schedules.
Yeah.
One night after the movie at the library.
Yeah, like 9, 10:30, 10 o'clock. You know, go out, grab a... No, they're closed, actually. They're usually open until about 9. So it would have to be on a non-movie night. But they're open for dinner every night in the Woodrow.
And maybe you could have your next party there.
I'll have lunch there. Not tomorrow.
You know they have a full catering room.
This is true. Full catering and for private parties. They can take the room and just block it right out.
You could even have a communion there if you want.
I guess.
They'll spit in you. They'll pee in the pickles.
Stop.
It's okay. We don't do communion. That's Catholic.
So you're a prot?
I'm a prot.
Okay.
She's born again.
So I don't know. I thought Catholics could be. I don't know any of this stuff. So you don't believe in the Pope?
No, they believe in him.
Believe in God, not a person like the Pope.
Okay.
I heard a joke, and it was something. I'm going to ruin it, whatever, but I'll just tell you the gist of the story.
Okay.
Of the, how something where, like, God, the Pope was saying something, if it's God's will, they'll live, and the whole thing. But as he drove away in his bulletproof Pope mobile.
Oh, yes, that was on, that was.
What was that?
They said that, it was on the late night talk show.
Okay.
And he was talking about gun control and. Was it gun control? Or the Pope was, you know.
This is some joke.
It was, well,
it's not even a joke, but it's.
I guess
seems,
not.
Jeff knows what I'm talking about.
It was all about the fact that the Pope thinks whatever happens, happens, and if people die, they die.
Pope is sounding very Jewish at the moment. Whatever happens, it happens. If they die, they die. God's here. He's not. He's whatever. You do what you're doing.
Well, that's but and then
go make some money. Support your family.
He goes into his bulletproof automobile, meaning he doesn't want it to happen. What's going to actually happen?
Like, it's okay if you die.
Oh, I
God's will if you die, but I'm gonna do everything I can to prevent it from happening. Something like that. So that was fun, but
Well, was that from? Where is that? I don't know if it was from Airplane or something like that, where the guy is in the airplane and he's not a pilot and he has to bring the plane down or else crash or whatever.
Yes,
and
sure.
Someone's trying to. I think it's Airplane, or it may just be a joke where there's someone at the ground and the control tower trying to tell this person.
Arnold would know this because he knows that movie word for word.
Okay, so the control tower guy is trying to talk him down. To this person who's never flown a plane before, and the plane guy is like panicking, saying, "We're gonna die, we're gonna die!" And the control room guy is like, "No, that is not true. Well, I'm not going to."
That's so funny because Arnold and I made a reference to that movie today.
But I'm not sure if it was from there or from another place or from just a joke book, or forget where I heard it. But I just burst out laughing when I read
it. I don't know why that makes
what.
Something else popped into my head. That the singing telegram lady, you know that little joke?
Tell.
The guy comes to the door and is like, sing a telegram.
Thank God this is a 1-800. Oh, no, it's not a 1-800 number.
Yeah, no, it's
a local call.
Hang up.
It's a local call. It's all free.
Well, the topic is local, ain't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. I have unlimited whatever.
Yeah.
It's
an overnight.
We're nationwide.
This is a 1-800 number. This is how my mind works.
Oh, because it sounds like one, because we got the 888 in there, but it's not. It's a local call.
Anyway. So thank you
and
for interrupting.
And it's routed through Beijing because of the station. So yeah, you might wind up being charged
Jeff
about $3 a minute.
Story.
What? Sorry?
Let's let Jeff tell his story.
Oh, sorry.
No.
Jeff, your joke.
This woman gets a...
And I'm the one who interrupted, and then I said, let's let him get back to his joke.
There you go. So she opens the door.
Let's now do a drum roll for Jeff's joke. Go!
Forgot it. So a woman opens the door. The guy says, "I have a telegram for Sylvia," and she goes, "Oh, I've always wanted a singing telegram. I'm so glad." It's not a singing telegram. She goes, "Oh, all my life I've been waiting for a singing telegram. Can you please give it?" Because it's not a singing telegram, but I really, really want it. She goes on and on. She goes, "Okay, fine. Your sister Rose is dead."
I have heard that joke, and it still works.
It's good. That was a good one. Yay! Woo! I don't have noisemakers or anything.
It's such an old classic
it's
joke.
It's brilliant. That's a
it's
wonderful
cute.
Joke.
It was good. It was a good one.
Well,
I'm not in a mess. Personally, my life is very good, and I don't know where.
Oh my God!
I don't even know what's going on. I don't even see a recession. Where? What recession?
Oh my God!
Well, yeah, you're talking to a man who did not do very well in the stock market this week, or the past couple of months, especially this week. Not me.
The last 2 weeks have been painful for me.
So you don't,
I
assume, Pam.
We all have, like, if I look and, I say I don't really look at that stuff, but Arnold does, and
Your retirement fund is dead.
No kidding. Well, your 401k and all that stuff is going to be way down right now.
I'm not ready to cash it in.
I know, but there are a lot of people. There are a lot of people over 50 who. Yes. One of my friends told me he works as an accountant, and all these people. The first time the Congress voted down this bailout package, that they all you just heard it on the, they heard it on the news, and all of a sudden you heard this moan in the office, and I was like, oh, how many more years do I have to work? Because it really killed the retirement. And how about all the people who are retired and living off of these things?
Well, that too. And, I mean, you're lucky, Pam, you have a decent, steady job at the library where, kiss your shoes and kiss the shoes of the
Republican politicians who give you the job.
Well, it'd be Democrats now. Swazi's...
No, but you're still in...
you're still in...
You're in the town of Hempstead, aren't you? Hewlett?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's still
well, anyway, whatever.
Well, no, you're asking why, who it affects, and it isn't affecting you yet. You don't feel it yet. You were feeling it more probably when you had to gas up your SUV a month ago when gas...
I drive a 1994 Toyota Camry.
So how's the mileage on that?
She has good mileage. Camry's good mileage.
Yeah, but after 10 years, it kind of...
Get better mileage.
No.
Toyota's a wonderful car. Let's get free Toyotas. Let's get them as a sponsor.
That'd be nice,
yeah. I'd like a Prius, please.
I would, too.
You've been watching too much Larry David.
Oh, my God. Larry David sold his Prius to whatever his agent is. What's his name? I don't remember.
To Jeff Garland? You mean the guy on the show?
Yes, Jeff. For $3,000. I mean, I know it's a show. It's not real. This is all. He's like, give me $3,000 for it. I don't even know how much it's worth.
Do you know, on The Price is Right this week, they gave away a Prius? And they actually said they were like making jokes in the middle in the showcase, and it says, this is all the ways. I forgot what the thing is. And he goes, if you want to really be better than everybody else, you can get this brand new car. It's a Prius where you can drive the road and tell everyone you're better than they are. It had Drew Carey. Had Drew Carey on the floor laughing.
Aren't you glad that Drew Carey is like the host?
I'm mixed. Because as you know,
everything I like. Everything I like.
I didn't say I hate it. I have mixed opinions about that. Mm-hmm. The show is about the contestants, and he tends to take away the focus a lot.
I like him.
He's a very likable person. but remember,
Jeff, you just don't like him because he's black.
That's right. But
the good thing is the contestants can hug him. They were afraid to hug Donald Trump, actually.
Oh, no, they were not.
Rib.
No, they weren't.
They were instructed. I believe that they were instructed that they couldn't.
That is absolutely not true. That is 100% not true.
What?
Because what you forgot, Pam, is I was a former contestant on The Price is Right.
You were on CBS.com website, and you read that.
No, I was on The Price is Right.
It says don't touch Bob. There's a thing that says...
Can I YouTube it and I'll find it?
Took it down off YouTube.
Why?
Because CBS, it was copyright infringement.
But did you? You didn't put it up on
YouTube. I didn't put it
up. Arnold post something on YouTube and they took it off. It was reference to Fall Out Boy and the whole Simpsons, where that scene where the not Fall Out Boy, but who was the nuclear man or some guy, whatever, he had these goggles on and. The acid was, he was like floating in a stream of acid, and he was like, my eyes, these goggles don't do nothing. Do you remember that?
No.
What season
But anyway, just so you know.
Was it Duffman?
Huh?
Was Duffman?
Duffman is a beer.
Yeah, but he always wears those goggles, and he's like, Duffman!
I'll see if I can, I can't send it to you on YouTube because we posted it.
But just so you know, there was no reason... For I hugged Bob Barker in the last one of his last shows.
I can't believe you were on The Price is Right. Did you win? What did you get?
Yes, I did.
What?
Yeah, he won some great stuff, actually.
Yeah.
Not a joke.
I won an $846 hammock.
Well, yeah. Okay, the hammock, right.
The hammock's great. It's in my friend's backyard. It's huge.
Okay.
You could fit like six people on this hammock. It's really big. It has every accessory you'd ever want on a hammock. It has a TV stand.
What are hammock accessories?
What?
What is a hammock accessory?
It has a cover, you know, for shaves. It has a drink holder. It has a TV stand, you know, TV table. It has...
Does it come with turtle wax?
No.
Oh, damn.
A lifetime supply.
But it has all these little bells and whistles, which is very interesting. And then I got
Did you give it away as a gift?
Yeah, I gave it to my best friends.
Oh, sure. Don't give it to old Dave.
Would you be sitting in the backyard on a hammock?
I'd be sitting on the backyard on a hammock. No.
That's why I gave it away, because I'm not going to be in the hammock either.
Okay,
so what else
did
you get?
Okay.
Oh, and then
but he won some really good.
Then I got up on stage and I played Squeeze Play. And I played Squeeze Play.
And
you
squeeze
a number out
tight.
Of the thing, and then you can.
Uh huh.
Like, remove one of the digits out of the money. What would it. Was it a car that you were.
I pulled the 5 out. And I got a 65-inch color TV.
Woohoo!
Real.
Do you still have it?
Mm-hmm.
So any burglars who are thinking of having thefts while he's at the station, there's just this giant TV in his living room.
That's right.
Oh, my God.
And his roof isn't quite fixed, so it's pretty easy to get out and lift it. But no, he won this really enormous screen TV.
It's like the biggest. It's bigger.
That's
than
some money too. You won a couple. Of
well,
times.
I won that later because they invited me to come back to be part of the Bob Barker replacement search, and so
he wasn't. You weren't trying out.
I want to be on a game show. How do I go about this? What else did I want to do? I want to be on the Amazing Race.
Well, the Amazing Race, you have to fill out an application.
Okay, I'll do. I'm not going to be able to run in hot. 100%
You have to. Well, they always put you through a desert. Around leg 6 or 7, you'll see they go through a desert.
I want to go on like a game show, like a local game show. It's not so, you know, it's not like I have to. Well, do they pay for you to go to California? Like The Price is Right?
No, The Price is Right is a very different show. You go to California and you just get a ticket and you stand in line.
Oh, yes, you're in the audience.
And you have no idea you're a contestant until you're a contestant.
So when they say, come on down, that's why everybody looks really shocked.
Yeah. You're shocked.
You wearing a tube top, and was that you?
Yeah, my boob fell out.
And as you ran down, your tube top fell down.
That's exactly who I am.
Wow.
That was you?
No wonder they took that off YouTube, yeah.
But people like me, because I had people sign my shirt.
Oh.
You saw it, Dave, didn't you?
Yes, I saw it a couple of times, I know. I think I still have it on a video cassette.
Dave even saw my special episode of The Price is Right, A Woman Called Lasagna.
Oh. It had nothing to do with Jeff, but there was...
it was hilarious.
Price is Right, and there was you know what color the woman was? A black woman whose name was spelled Lasonya.
Lasagna.
Lasagna. But Bob Barker... Really, probably not as a joke or not for any other reason, just from the way he would pronounce that word, kept calling her lasagna.
Oh, that's why it's a lasagna episode.
Yes.
And she never corrected him. She got up on stage and, hi, lasagna, how are you?
And the concept of this middle-aged black woman we call lasagna was rather amusing.
That's fun. Maybe one day I'll get to watch it.
It was quite interesting.
2:01 in the morning here.
I hope Jim is still good, alive. Hope Arnold hasn't beat
him. Well, I think maybe. Oh, she is calling back. let's get her back then. WGBB, Pam?
Your sister Rose.
Arnold is freaking out because I said his last name over the air.
Well, I didn't even hear
it. Oh, did he hang up? Was that it?
No, I don't know what. I thought you guys hung up on me.
No, we just lost you. We figured that you freaked out at saying your name and just kind of.
Can we play some, like, sexual music? Look, we still have all the gospel music.
I want to be out of here by 2:30. 2:30. No matter what, I'm out of here by 2:30.
Can we play some sexually explicit gospel?
There's no such thing as sexual, not in these racks. I mean, there could be, but it ain't going to be here.
Damn it, Jesus.
Give it to me, Jesus.
Pam got it. What's wrong?
Ooh, drive it. That ain't no nail. Yeah. God almighty. Now Pam's, now they're fighting who can turn off the radio first.
That's it?
This program was brought to you by Woodrow Delicatessen in Peninsula Boulevard, Peninsula Shopping Center. They're actually on Peninsula Boulevard.
Peninsula. It's like penis.
And which brings pickles, yeah. We're getting silly later.
Pee in the pickles.
Fancy Schmancy Balloons. Five. You know, we never give out the phone number for Fancy Schmancy. What is it?
It's okay. No one ever calls me.
But I'll give it out anyway.
I've had the worst business in forever.
516-797-3229.
You can buy the furniture.
For all your party decorating needs. 797-3229. Fancy Schmancy Balloons. Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy Kings of Broadway. 10% off for all Dave's Gone
Balloons. Just walk in and say you listen to them on the radio, just like Pam.
Right.
And maybe you'll get lucky tonight, too.
10% off at Hewlett Minuteman Press, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett. And they're open 6 days a week for all your copying, printing jobs. And Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, the Bible of Broadway for more than 65 years. Performing Arts Insider. Go to performingartsinsider.com to find out more. And also to davesgoneby.org to find out how you can get a one-year subscription to PAI for only $120. That's like $50, $60 off.
When are you going to make it 100 and nothing? Like $99.99?
Not for... No, we haven't done that in a long, long time. Can't do it. It's not worth it. We've got to charge. It's a journal, and people pay a lot for it because of the information that Performing Arts Insider has in it. This program...
I want it for free.
No. No. Carol Edmonston.
What's
thank you, sir. At sidhoff.com. SYDHOFF.com.
Put on that last F for funny.
There you go.
For extra funny.
An extra F. And who was the O? And David Sheward, executive editor of Backstage. I want to thank him so much.
It's like we only talked to him like 3 hours
ago. It feels like days ago, doesn't it?
No.
Hey, Mom and Dad. Love
who consummated about 40 years ago?
Yeah, 44 or 45 to be exact. And love seeing them at Rosh Hashanah, and I'll see you guys on Yom Kippur.
How was Rosh Hashanah dinner? What'd you have? You have a little tegelach?
What's tegelach? What is tegelach?
Is it a matzah ball?
No, we had the usual. It was turkey and also a roast and potatoes and my grandma's special recipe, purple glop, which is cranberry with a little pineapple and some other stuff.
Ooh, sounds
good. Yeah.
Sounds good. Did you save me any?
No. Sorry. Well, there wasn't that much left over. There wasn't.
You didn't invite me either.
Well, I thought you were out of town. Sorry. Next year, I won't invite you.
You knew I wasn't out of town because it was Monday night. We did the radio show the Sunday night before it.
Yeah, well, I don't know what you're going to... Well, anyway, it's not my business to invite you to my parents' party.
I want to be invited.
Well, I'll ask. I'll ask about an upcoming whatever.
Okay.
Sukkot. You can sit on the roof. Okay, are we ready? Can we go?
No.
Please go. It's my show. How did I lose control of my show?
Oh, I don't know. You invited me about a year and a half ago.
Well, we're going to play one more time my brand new song, the song for the economy, Crappy Days Are Here Again. But before then, it's just want to say it's time to leave the neighborhood. But I will be back, and I hope Jeff will be back.
And you know why? Crappy Days Are Here Again because we're not on the air for another week.
That's right. For 6 days, you're going to have to go without Dave's Gone By, without me and Jeff.
And the big time.
Although you can hear Filler Up on this station, where I play music for half an hour. I forget it's two nights a week here.
Tuesdays and Thursdays.
No, I think Saturday nights and maybe Tuesdays. Go check AM1240WGBB.com to find out when you can hear Filler Up with me, Dave, on this radio station.
And
but
without me, Jeff.
Without Jeff. But Jeff will be back. I'll be back next Sunday, October 12th. With the 294th episode of Dave's Gone By. So until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz.
And Jeff Goodman.
Wishing you a good night, an easy fast.
And gone by.
Banks are failing, feds are bailing. Look at all the falling stock. War, inflation, dying nation, smashing upon Plymouth Rock. crappy days are here again. The world is filled with fear again. Our savings disappear again. Crappy days are here again. Grab your money from the bank and hawk your clothes to fill your tank. We have George Bush and greed to thank. Crappy days are here again. My, how the deficit's grown, and good luck getting a loan. See the banks go up in smoke, and all the brokers going broke. Just like the New York Mets, they choke. Crappy days are here again. Everybody's lost and numb, and frightened of the years to come. But there are no towers to leap from. Crappy days are here again. One thing we all know for certain, no one's hurting at Halliburton. Crappy days will hit us hard. Keep maxing out that credit card while other countries we bombard. Crappy days are here again. Everyone is sad and stressed. Depression leaves us all depressed. America's been repossessed. Crappy days are here again.